Steve. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It's the Monday edition of our show. We're thrilled you're listening. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. How was your weekend? Everything good?
I had a great weekend. Little Michael Mack played another gig, so I had a good time watching him. That's pretty pathetic when your 16-year-old son has a gig and that's your only date night anymore.
Right.
It's the only time we go out to see Michael.
Right. A lot happened over the weekend. The death of Nancy Reagan.
Yes.
Who I noticed, and I'm sure if I noticed it, other people noticed this too, the same word was used to describe Nancy Reagan in every single description. You heard the word stylish over and over and over and over, and it's hard to debate that. She was stylish, but it's just interesting that everybody, I saw Barbara Walters on ABC, I saw from the very first announcement on CNN, the word stylish over and over and over. Do you think there'd be one word, should you ever die? I don't see it happening anytime soon, but should that ever happen, is there one word that will describe you, that will sum you up?
Loud.
Loud. The loud Wendy Snyder has passed away at the age of 116, we're sad
God.
To report.
People could hear the sigh for miles.
I'm not making it that far. Which I don't even want to think about because I'm sure death is knocking on my door. But she was stylish.
She was stylish.
One of the first ladies who brought back the Jackie O stylishness.
Right.
The fashion flair,
right,
if you will. And Michelle Obama is now the next one.
I think so. I think that's a fair assessment of her. She also, I don't know that I forgot this, but... She was so thin in every single picture I saw of her. She was just thin. But I guess that's not the word you would use at the end to describe her. Stylish is a better adjective.
Women are damned if they do, damned if they don't. Either they're too heavy or they're too thin.
Well, you didn't say she was
too
thin.
Yeah, not too thin, just thin.
Men are damned if they do, damned if they don't. They're just trying to describe someone, for God's sakes.
But you know how, like, for most of us, there's always some weight issue. I don't think Nancy Reagan ever had that because she was thin.
Maybe she didn't like being that thin.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
We can't ask her.
It's too late.
She was very stylish. I thought classy was another word that could be used.
Yeah, she was all that. It's interesting in the days when the Republican Party, when looking for a title, they call themselves the days of Ronald Reagan. We got to go back to the days of Ronald Reagan. What a compliment that must have been to her toward the end to know that when the Republicans are looking for the glory days, it's your husband's tenure that they're referring to.
Is that how Hillary thinks when the Democrats say, go back to the days of Clinton?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not positive.
Okay, maybe there's a better way to phrase it. Mary, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
What would be the right words, Mary, to describe? Stylish is a good one. Thin was on my, that was my account. She was thin, but definitely stylish. But is there a better way to describe her?
Well, I don't think stylish is good either. It should be elegant and fit and slender.
Yeah. She was both elegant and slender, no question about it.
Yeah, every picture of her, she's lovely. She's lovely.
Yeah.
And they really loved each other, man. I know it was
that
a second marriage, but
was that
still
a love story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
It. Yeah, that was a great love story, wasn't it?
They showed the footage yesterday in several places of how she was so well composed all throughout the death of Ronald Reagan, and then at the very end at the burial, as she kind of almost draped herself on the casket and really had a very, very difficult last few moments there. And how can you blame her? You know, you spend that many years with somebody, but that was hard to watch.
It really was, and it was so nice to hear that she'll be right.
Yeah.
They're back together.
Yep, back together again.
See, thank you, Mary.
I'm remembering her as tenacious and tough and formidable and...
You
did not cross Nancy Reagan.
She was all that. There was a lot of criticism over the years from his staff, from Reagan's staff, saying that she would just belittle them and say, I want things done this way, not that way. And,
well, I mean, they were a remarkable couple, and, you know, they each had each other's great confidence, and she had great influence. And that's like being thin. I don't mean that as a negative. I mean, she was powerful.
Yeah.
And, you know, she exercised that power in defense of her husband.
And right up to the end, you know, I mean, his... his Alzheimer's is fairly well documented, and she went out of her way to protect him. There were a couple of interviews. Actually, Barbara Walters talked about one the last time she interviewed the two of them together. He would be kind of searching for words, and she would just constantly jump in and help. And you would,
although
you would,
that probably happened before he got Alzheimer's.
I would imagine. Yeah,
that's
I would
what
think
we
so.
Women do sometimes. Well, and we're sorry. We're just trying to
that's
help.
All right.
Hi, Eric.
Wendy, I'm a funeral director, and I'll write you a practice obituary and trade for a Lou Malnati's piece. How does that sound?
Depends how good it is. You got it ready to roll?
The pizza or the obituary?
The obit.
The obits, I know I wrote an obit, in all seriousness, for a very good friend of mine who passed away suddenly. And an obit should be everything positive about their character traits and personality and their accomplishments.
Good luck finding something for mine.
You'll find something. There's things there.
I've heard some doozy, not obituaries, but eulogies over the years. And I had one that the ex-wife got up and spoke, and I can always tell when it's going to go sour in a hurry, because they get up there, they clear their throat, they adjust the microphone, and if a woman gets up and puts her fingers to her temples and says, I just want to say I was married to Frank for 5 years, and it was the worst 5 years of my life.
Oh, no.
You can't do that at a eulogy. Who allows that to happen?
Believe me, it's usually the ex-wives. And she went on about how it was okay in the beginning, but then he started drinking, and then he came home. I had to move to Colorado to get away. And it's like, okay, somebody get the hook and exit stage left.
How uncomfortable would that be?
But the family shouldn't allow that. Do you honestly, Eric, as a funeral director, do you really see that?
Yes.
Not frequently, yes, please tell us.
More frequently than you'd like. Now, but see, if it's a eulogy said in a church, usually the priests the clergymen look at the eulogy. They look at everybody's eulogy and read it ahead of time, and they edit it for propriety, I'll put it that way. Because some people, you know, get up there and they just want to vent, and
that's terrible.
Sour in a hurry.
I would imagine.
Oh. I actually had one in my own family, believe it or not, and I come from a good family, but I had a distant relative who was an in-law who passed away, and the church was packed, and the people who got up to say the eulogy, it was more of a roast. And during the roast, I wasn't sure if I should jump up and cover my 90-year-old mother's ears or my aunt's ears. Yeah, because it wasn't good for church, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you should save your little roasts for like a after mass party.
Yeah,
the after hours party.
Right.
Exactly. And as I said, a lot of the priests are kind of wise to this, so they'll say, well, I need to review the obituary, or the eulogy, rather. And
then they just slip in a different one, like, here's my practice one. Here's the one I'm going to use.
Right.
Eric, thank you so much for calling. Work on that obit, and we'll see if you get a pizza.
You've been to services where instead of just one person eulogizing the deceased, they just kind of leave it open-ended, and they say, if anyone wants to come up and say something. I like those more.
I don't think I've ever
been
to one.
Have you never been to any of those? I've been to a couple of those where somebody serves as kind of the host, and they say something, but they say, look, this is the way we're going to do it. If anyone wants to come up and say something, here's a chance. I just think you get a better picture of the person hearing it from 20 voices as opposed to one or two.
Yeah, but then you run the risk of having someone come up, go, really? I got a few things I'd like to say.
I was at one a couple of years ago. One of my agent's husband died, and we went to his, and it was like that. Whoever wants to say something, say something. And this guy came up and just told about a dream he had that had nothing to do with the person who had died or anything. He just used the moment to talk about this weird dream he had. And everybody's going, well, it's going to pay off because he's going to get a visit from the guy who did. Nope, never did. That was a good way to be entertained for 6 minutes. It just had no point at all. And I even said to my wife, I said, is this the time we all get up and just talk about a weird dream we've had? Is that where we're going with this?
See, that's why I wouldn't let just anyone come up. Because there are times that you're at a funeral and you think, boy, I really would have liked to participate, But if you're not asked, you right. know what I mean? They yeah. should handle that. I don't like that. Anyone else? Last call.
Right. That can't go bad, can it?
All right. I've never seen anything. Oh, it's kind of a good idea.
I've been to a couple. All right, we'll take a break. We have a lot more show for you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, we're talking about the weekend. A lot of big things happened. I'm guessing at some point we may talk about Peyton Manning retiring. But since we're talking about presidents, and we are because of the death of Nancy Reagan, there was a special on CNN that was phenomenal. Last night after the debate, they did a special about the first televised debate of all time, and that would be your John F. Kennedy against your Richard Nixon. And they just didn't show the debate, but they showed what led up to the debate. And I don't know if anyone else is like this. I was 1 day old when John F. Kennedy died. So
and you remember it?
I don't remember it.
All right, good.
I don't remember it. But
because I know some people can go far back in time.
I can't go to my 1 day. I've tried. I can't do it. All exposure I have to John F. Kennedy is it's grainy black and white, either pictures or film.
And John waving or saluting.
Yes.
That's what I remember most. Yes. And I was 6 months old.
But you know how, for the most part, we've seen the same footage over and over and over, the moments you just described and a couple of others. It's always interesting to me to see other footage of him. It always jolts me.
Because you've not seen it before.
Not used to it.
New material.
The charisma just pours off of that guy. It really does. They showed him campaigning in Wisconsin, in small towns in Wisconsin, and they were talking about how he and Jackie were the Beatles before there were the Beatles.
That's interesting.
And it's accurate. They did this block where they explained how Joe Kennedy, his father, always wanted his son to be president, and how he and his two brothers, Bobby and Teddy at the time, just kind of took Wisconsin by storm. And they showed the footage of them meeting people. And you see people just get all like they're going to faint at the sight of these guys, these larger than life characters. If you get a chance to see it, I don't know that CNN, I'm hoping they'll repeat it. But it was fun to watch.
But then you have people, too, who, you know, he did have this charisma, which kind of covered for some of the extracurricular activities he took part in.
Agreed.
It helped him.
I wonder, it probably did, Steve, didn't it, to some extent? There was just such a mystique about him. And they showed how in the early days it was him on the Democratic side. It was him against Hubert Humphrey, who was a nice enough guy, but just couldn't come close to matching that kind of, he just had this demeanor, Kennedy, that Hubert Humphrey on his best day couldn't come close to touching. It was impossible.
Well, he was more of a frat boy against Grandpa.
There was this moment where they talked about, and it's a song I'm guessing people have heard by now, but Frank Sinatra changed one of his songs to be a Kennedy campaign song, and they were pointing out how Kevin Spacey was the host of this. How in that day it just wasn't done. You had the most popular singer altering the lyrics to one of his songs to salute John F. Kennedy, and he said everything just kept tipping it in more and more and more and more.
We were talking about Nancy Reagan and that they had such a love affair, Nancy and Ron.
Yeah.
And just everybody starts picking. 708 says, did they love each other so much that their kids weren't their primary focus? Because they did have some falling out with Ron Jr., I know.
Yeah, and then there's a daughter, Nancy, and she and her dad were at odds for a little bit, too. I don't know. I guess everybody's family has that to some extent, right?
Yeah, but I, you know, poor my husband, because, you know, now that my kids are growing up, they come kind of first so they can get their bearings, and then hopefully Jim will still be around for when they're off and on their own.
Sure.
Because I feel like they need our help more. 708 says, I saw an obit that said, in lieu of flowers, don't vote for Hillary. Why do you do that? Why do you do the mean stuff?
No, that's kind of funny.
It is funny. It is very funny. It is.
Now, would the person who passed away like that? I mean, I guess they said put this in there, but I don't think they really mean it, do they?
I don't know.
That to be your obit?
Well, your obit is your last chance to take a dig at somebody. So,
oh.
And people, you know, we've pointed out here on the show a couple of times.
You've pointed out if a plane is crashing, you would take that phone call to call someone you hate.
I think about it. No, but I'm saying we've talked about this, that people have said in their obituaries they've taken shots at Jay Cutler. You know, it's their last breath. They go, and put the fact that Jay Cutler shouldn't be the Bears quarterback. I almost admire that in somebody. It's like, what have I got at this point? I'm about to be dead. Just one more shot at somebody I don't like. Go for it.
Because you have to pay per letter. Is it
it's
worth it?
It's worth the extra $6.40.
Well, I guess it's worth it if somebody on the radio talks about you.
But again, I said this earlier, and I mean this because I kept thinking about this yesterday. I know Nancy Reagan was in failing health the last several weeks. They talked about how they kind of knew her days were numbered, and it must have been kind of reassuring to her every time the Republicans talked about the glory days of the party. They called it was usually the Lincoln and Reagan days of being a Republican. So that must be nice to know that even among the Republicans, that's considered to be the golden era is your husband's presidency. That's got to be a nice send off.
Well, this just in her obituary said Trump question mark.
It did. Are you sure?
No.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Steve has the news and then we have a lot more show planned for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Bill, when we were in high school, I was one of the kids who looked forward to gym class every day.
Yeah, sure.
I was a bit of a jock. I loved to play. I was very good at kickball.
Yeah.
I liked kickball a lot. And now I notice that gym class has changed quite a bit. I have a junior high and a high schooler. They have to wear heart monitors. They're taken seriously because kids don't go out and play anymore. So gym class is very important.
Sure.
So we have a couple of PE teachers, Roberto and Luis Hernandez. You guys from Cicero?
Yes,
we are.
And is that true about PE, where it's very important nowadays to keep kids moving and grooving?
The lack of movement has been really tough. You know, we actually noticed that kids are playing more video games. The technology is awesome. Obviously, they are attracted to staying inside more often now. And so we try to incorporate movement in our gym classes. And so we start off with some type of running and then some type of cardio-based lifting. And then the last 15 minutes, they get to play basketball, hockey, whatever sport they were doing.
Yeah, something that they enjoy. You know, we're battling a horrible war on indoor games now. You know, anything from cell phones to PlayStations to Xbox.
Absolutely.
You know, computers. You know, who wants to go outside on a beautiful day where you could stay inside?
But now you guys were both PE teachers, but you had a little extra weight, didn't you?
We did. Yes. You know, my brother and I, we've always loved sports, but we always love to eat.
Which is a lot of people.
You know, that's our problem. We, you know, ever since we were little kids, you know, my mom has a story about when we were little kids that we'll get back from school and we'll eat. My older brother will get back from school and we'll eat. My oldest brother get back and we'll eat again, and then we'll wait for them to eat. And, you know, we used to eat a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But the good news is both of you did something about this. You were contestants, and one of you won on The Biggest Loser on NBC, where the two of you lost a combined poundage, 299 pounds? Is that right?
Isn't
Am I getting that
amazing?
Right? 299 pounds between the two of you.
You know, let me correct you. We both won, by the way.
Oh, did you both?
He won the big prize. I won the at-home prize. So I don't like cutting
Lewis
myself
talking.
Short.
Yeah, this Berto is Berto won, but you won as well.
I don't
well.
Like cutting myself short.
That's so, yeah. All right.
If you notice all our fan page pictures we take, I put the one up and Lewis puts the two.
Yes. But now, did that inspire you that you have these kids that you're saying it's important to, you know, be physically active? And yeah. Didn't that kind of inspire
well,
you to get on Biggest Loser?
We would stand in front of our classroom and tell the kids, don't drink pop. Don't go and get cheeseburgers. Make sure, you know, you eat a salad before you eating the main course. And we would go home and we would drink two or three pops and have two or three cheeseburgers throughout the day. And we didn't take care of ourselves. And, you know, in a way, we say we felt like hypocrites up there standing
sure.
in front of the classroom telling the kids what to do. And our biggest thing was, don't do as I do as I say.
Yeah.
And so the kids will always say, well, Coach Hernandez, you are a big guy, you know. And so why should we listen to you? And my thing would be like, well, you don't want to look like this. And so the kids will kind of still kind of be like, oh, I know what you're saying. You know, don't do what you're doing, you know, because I'm young.
Yeah.
And obviously at a young age, these metabolisms are going so fast.
Oh, wait till you hit 40, kids. Yeah. Just wait.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they don't really realize that until you start explaining it detail by detail. I'm like, for me, I was always big. I was, you know.
Your whole life. From the time you were a little kid, Bruno. Yeah, both of you were big.
We were both born big kids.
Yeah.
You know, babies. We were, I think I was 9. He was 11 pounds.
Yeah.
So we were big babies. So our poor mother suffered.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we have this little thing that we always say, like, so when did you guys start getting heavy? They used to ask us, we're the Biggest Loser. When did you guys start getting bigger? And my response always like, as soon as I got introduced to food. I blew up.
Food is great, and that's what's hard, you know. You have to eat every day, and so portion control is very important.
Very
I could
important.
Be a nutritionist if I could only practice what I preach. I'd be looking great. But so that inspired you to get in shape and not be a hypocrite, but what all of a sudden the light bulb went off and said, I'm going to do this. I'm finally going to do this.
You know what? We're both very good competitors, and we faced a lot of great competitors over at the Biggest Loser. You know, the Comets were a family that they were there to win it from the beginning. And, you know,
change their lives as well.
Change their lives. And they inspired us as well. But we were there. We just didn't want anybody to beat us. And so you put us in a
good
situation.
Inspiration.
Yeah, you put us in a situation where you are competing against other people and you want to beat everybody. So, you know, Dovet said something at the finale that he's like, who would have thought the Twins were going to sweep? He's like, wait a minute, let me rephrase that. He's like, we always thought the Twins were going to win because from day one, I mean, I yelled at our black team on day one. I'm like, get your butts off. We got to win this thing.
We ended up
winning by 24 pounds that week.
Yeah.
And not because I was yelling at them, but because I think that Lewis and I were pushing everybody that was on our team. And
we've always been competitors, you know, since day one. You know, my brother and I have always competed against it. We've always loved sports.
Sure.
I mean, in high school, we played 4 years of high school football. We wrestled in high school. We played college ball. So we've always been that athlete, you know.
Yeah.
But the only problem with us is that portion control. We love to eat.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you have a beautiful mother like the one that we have. And
she's a good cook, isn't she?
And my dad, too. You know, my dad was a cook in his younger days, so he knows how to cook. He knows how to do the sloppy stuff. You know, so it's you never know. When we were kids, you would walk into the kitchen, you'd be like, Dad, what the hell is that? And you start eating, and you'd be like, oh, my God, this is the best thing. He invented barbecue spaghetti.
Barbecued what? Spaghetti.
Oh, barbecue, because he did. Because we told him, Daddy, we want spaghetti today. So what did he do? He's like, all right. So he did everything the pasta, the meat, and then he didn't have sauce. So he saw in the fridge there was barbecue and ketchup. So he added it, and we got home. You should have seen the fit that we put.
I bet.
And we were like, this is not
spaghetti.
And so he's like, well, that's all we have.
That's all that. You know.
And so next thing we know, we're sucking our fingers because it was delicious.
Is that good?
Don't mock it till you try it. Right. It was amazing.
Barbecue spaghetti.
Let me ask you about this moment on Biggest Loser. I've seen the show sporadically. I see it every once in a while. So from time to time, or maybe they do this every episode, I don't know, they take people who are bigger and you're up on national television with almost no clothes on. They make you take your shirt off and you stand up there. Is that humiliating to know an entire country is looking at you and you're not in your best shape?
You know, you put yourself up there, you know, and you got yourself to that position, you know. So, yeah, it is. You go up there and you're like, oh, my God, every role in your body, everybody is watching TV is going to see it.
Yeah.
So you think to yourself, you know, why am I here? You know, I use that as motivation. Like, every week I want to look better. Every week I want to look better. So, yeah, I use that as motivation. And it is scary.
Sure.
You go up there.
Very intimidating.
Very intimidating. You go up there and the whole world is watching you. So it was difficult, but, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
You know? So that's
and
the way
And you're not
I
the only
it.
Person in America no. looking like that either.
Well, you know what?
Fortunately,
I always
we're
felt
not.
Bad. About 60% of Americans. 60% is, I think it's even gone up to 65% of all Americans are considered overweight. You know? So this country is going through something. And we have to kind of turn the knob and go the other direction. So,
You know, when we were up there, we weren't the only ones. I always felt really bad for the ladies because ladies tend to be more seclusive, more, you know, more hesitant.
And a heavier guy is more acceptable than a heavier woman.
By far.
Oh,
yeah. And the girls have a lot.
So the ladies will go up there and you'll be like, I feel really bad for them because,
you know, they're not used to doing something like that. You know, guys walk around the locker room and, you know, walking around with your shirt off, whatever. And girls don't do that. I mean, they tend to try to be more seclusive, be a little more private. And so I felt bad for the ladies. And yes, but you go up there. But you know what? Like Louis said, you put yourself in that situation. It's time to get out. You know, and America needed to see that. I honestly do believe that, that God put us on this path for a reason. And so that's why you would always see me crossing myself and praying to the Virgin Mary and saying my prayers, because I knew that, yes, I'm there to lose weight, but I also felt that there was some other reason I was there. And that's, you should be surprised. You guys will be surprised how many people have emailed us and reached out to us. We heard some from some guy from South Africa the other day, and he's like, you guys are inspiring me to get off the couch.
Yeah.
South Africa. I'm like,
what's better than that?
Good. The Philippines?
The Philippines, Malaysia.
Oh, it's been great.
Australia, and then the...
just Britain, all over the globe. And then at the bottom, does it say, by the way, could you give me that spaghetti, that barbecued spaghetti? I would love to try that. Stay where you are. We've got more with Roberto and Luis Hernandez, the winners from NBC's The Biggest Loser. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, they're brothers, they're twin brothers, they're from Cicero, they're phys ed teachers, and they are winners on NBC's The Biggest Loser. We have Roberto and Luis Hernandez in the studio. Roberto, you lost 160 pounds? You did? And your brother, Luis, 139 pounds?
Yes, ma'am.
That is just unbelievable. How did this affect your family? Was your family, I know you guys went away to do The Biggest Loser, but is anyone in your family heavy? Did you guys all not eat well? How did this work?
You know, we, like every other family, there are people that are fit regardless of what, you know, they eat or anything. Then there are people that they eat a salad and they gain 10 pounds. So, yeah, we know our family's up and down. We have some people that are overweight in our family. There are some people that they are in great fit, you know. And it's hard. It's hard, especially these days and they where stress takes over a lot of stuff. And a lot of people stress eat. And I was one of those people, you know. Get home and all I want to do is kind of relax and eat and be happy.
And that's true, too. You know, you go to work all day, and the last thing you want to do is get home and cook a whole meal. And then, so what's
fast
it easy?
Fast food makes it easy, unfortunately.
Order a pizza, you know, stop at a fast food joint and get something really quick. And I mean, that's what it was, especially when you have little ones like the one I have here. And he, say hi, Jacob.
Hey, Jacob.
Are you proud of your dad for what he's done?
Yeah.
Yeah. How could you not be? Do you guys notice a difference in the way society perceives you? Just walking around, do people treat you differently when you're thinner and more in better shape than
you,
the
you
old
know
way?
What? I would always try to put on my pants and, you know, I have to suck it in. And, you know, I was size 46 going on to a 48 and pretty soon not to a 50. And so I put on my pants, and every time I was out at a store trying new pants, you know, you get the eyes, you're like, damn, look at that guy's pretty big.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, I tend to have my wife, like, go give me those pants instead of me going over there, because it was embarrassing.
Yeah, it was scary. You know, society does look at you differently, and it sucks, you know. It's hard. It's one of those things that you don't want to be there, but at the same time, you're stuck in this little box that you're trying to get yourself out.
It could be a disease as well, you know. You're so stuck in eating bad that it's kind of hard to get out.
Even now, I'm scared. You know, I've lost 139 pounds, and every day I wake up and I struggle with eating. You know,
it's losing easier than maintaining?
Oh, it's by far. Yeah. By far, because, you know, especially us, we were in a competition. You know, we were in it to win it, you know, and it's hard. But once it end, then, you know, we were faced with what now?
Temptation.
You know, temptation. Now we could eat whatever we want. We don't have to worry about the Biggest Loser. So I wake up every morning and I'm scared.
Struggle.
My wife, which I love to death. I love you and thank you for being there and having my corner.
What's her name?
Lubina Perez Hernandez. You know, my two little boys, Arturito and Benny. I call them A and B. they were my motivating factor, and they are my motivating factor now. And if it wasn't for her, every morning she wakes up, she already has my breakfast ready for me. And, you know, and I thank her because it's hard. It's not easy.
Of course.
It's not
for
easy.
Me, you know, it was seeing him.
Jacob.
And if you guys remember seeing Jacob, seeing me in the first episode when I broke down. And I'm not a person that cries really easy. I guess they broke me down on the Biggest Loser because I did tear up a lot. And, And seeing him play by himself, that's the one thing that broke my heart. You know, my wife would tell me, get up and go play with Jacob. You know, go take him for a jog, go for a walk, take him to the park. And I wouldn't. I would just be stuck on that couch.
Yeah.
And I hated myself for it. I really did. And like Lewis said, our motivating factor was my little boy Jacob, my older boy Angel, and then I got Emilio, and then my beautiful wife, Rosie,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, without her, like Lewis said, you know, she was my stone to lean on. You know, she would cook. She would prep my meals from Sunday all the way to the next Sunday.
And it's prep work, isn't it?
Oh, it's very not important.
Like if you're not prepared, that's when you're going to make poor choices.
Oh, yeah, it's very important. And the girls, our wives, Lumina and Rosie, they lost weight themselves. You know, they started, they got on the horse and they started losing weight themselves, you know, just by mere fact that we don't have that junk food anymore. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Accountability. They held us to what we said we were going to do. And you know, with God on our side, we are going to continue this road and we want to help as many people out there as possible.
So with your own kids, are you, because of what you guys have experienced, are you a lot more mindful about their diets and making sure that they get plenty of exercise? You must
Jacob,
be, right?
Jacob gave up drinking pop and eating fries.
Oh, excellent.
And he loves water now. And,
yeah.
and he'll tell you right now, he's like, right, Jacob?
Yeah.
He's like, he'd rather have a glass of water than a some pop or something, and rather have... You know, on the show, he said he was eating broccoli, and he does. He
Good.
Does. He actually eats broccoli, eats a little bit of lettuce, and then he enters into his, you know, favorite foods. But at least he's not going to eat the whole thing now.
Right.
Don't get us wrong. I mean,
you still have fries.
Yeah,
you still have
don't
things.
Don't get us wrong.
You know, have taste, though, instead of every day.
Yeah, we're not these health freaks. We're like, oh, no, you know, and nothing wrong against those people. But,
right.
you know.
It's not you.
This is not me. I'm going to have a cheat day. I had my cheat day on Saturday. I'm not going to lie to you. You
What'd
know,
you have?
I had pizza from Paisans. A little shout out for Paisans. I had pizza. You know, I had to.
Did you have a salad first? Did you have less than you would have before?
You know what? I noticed that I didn't have my salad before, but I did notice instead of eating 8 slices, I had 4 slices.
Oh, that's
you know?
Better.
So, and I was full and I was happy and I was content. So I know the difference, you know, but yeah. I did have my temptation filled, you know, and then what I did in the morning was I got up extra early in the morning and I went cycling at Full Cycle in Chicago on Clybourne and I got my butt working out.
Good.
So I could burn those calories. So I could enjoy that pizza.
Good.
You know?
I have a question for you. You guys both look fantastic.
Thank you.
And
Thank
it
you.
Was a very tough struggle and an emotional struggle. When you are now in shape and you see people that aren't and someone's saying to them, oh, put the cheeseburger down, does that help or hurt?
You know, it doesn't. You know, you want to give them support. You want to tell them, okay, if you want to have a cheeseburger, let's go have a cheeseburger. But you know what? We got to work out. If you want to have that cheeseburger, like Lewis said, he got up early and he did the exercising, and then he was able to cheat.
Yeah.
Now he's only eating the calories he burned.
Right.
Instead of eating calories on top of calories, you know, you want to make sure you burn the calories that you're eating, and if you're not doing that, that's when it becomes fat.
It's accountability. You know, and I get it. We were heavy, you know, and we built it. Once you lose weight, well, it's not that easy.
But people think it is. Oh,
people
you're just lazy,
to, oh, yeah.
you know.
And, you know, we have to be accountable to ourselves. People that are overweight, they keep saying, oh, tomorrow. I mean, we used to call ourselves our Monday twins because we always started. I tell you, we used to always start on Monday.
Always,
you know. And then Monday came and we never started, you know.
Yeah.
But you take that first step and you have to say, okay, today I'm going to be accountable for what I'm going to be eating. You know, you have to take accountable.
Yeah.
Nobody else. Who cares what everybody else is saying? And if it's one salad a day and then you cheat the other days, that's day one. The next day you could eat 2 salads or whatever the case is. But, you know, accountability
is holding yourself to it.
A very quick question. Is this Lucia?
Yes, it is.
We have 30 seconds here. So ask your question and go ahead.
Okay. Fan of the show. Congratulations to Lewis and Roberto.
Thank you.
Oh, sir. I've always wondered, what do you do with the extra skin? I know, you know, do you have surgery? Does the show help you pay for the surgery?
You know what? We were told that if we were to keep the weight off, we can go back in California in a year later.
And Dr. Zanga,
and Dr. Zanga will make the assessment if we have to have it or not. Luckily, Lewis and I don't have that much loose skin.
You don't.
And is that because of diet and exercise?
Diet and exercise.
Diet alone will leave more of the loose skin.
Dr. Zanga said that just because we were athletes beforehand,
yeah.
you know, we had a lot of muscle, and which, you know, it kind of helped at the end. So we don't have a lot of loose skin, but the rest of the contestants, whoever had, I don't know who does, they could go back to Dr. Zanga in a year, and show him that they kept the weight off, and then he'll assess that.
Oh, good. good.
Lucille, you sound like you've lost weight.
Well, no, not really. I think I'm doing okay, but I am a fan of the show, and both Louis and Roberto are very inspirational for people who do need to lose
Lucille, weight. You can do it. Just one step at a time. You can do it, baby. Just make sure that you hold yourself accountable and look me up on Facebook, Roberto Hernandez 77, and send me a message, and I can give you some tips if you guys need anything. Instagram, I'm Roberto Hernandez 17, and Twitter, Roberto Hernandez 17, Berto, or Berto 7977.
We'll put a link up on our Facebook page at Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, because, Louis, I'm sure you have websites or
it's
Facebook and stuff.
Yeah, it's easy to find me.
Just Google them. Do you have any parting words to inspire someone out there?
Keep going, guys. I mean, hashtag get off the couch, America. Hashtag, you know, get strong, be strong, stay strong. Definitely, I know that a lot of you guys, I was sitting where you guys were at a year ago. Actually, I was 360 pounds this time last year. So I lost a little bit of weight before going to the Biggest Loser. So get up and do it, guys. It just takes one step. And by natural will and everything, your other foot's going to follow.
And anything to add to that, Louis?
Guys, stay strong, guys. Love Chicago. Love you guys. Stay strong. You see us on the street, be sure to say hi. And remember, if you're not moving, you ain't losing.
Continued success to both of you, Roberto and Louis Hernandez. Both winners on The Biggest Loser, although Roberto, a bigger winner.
Yes.
Slightly bigger. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Continued success. Quick break. More news and show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thanks, Jacob. And Wendy Snyder, I from the look of your face, Bill, I just completely grossed you out.
Well, you just showed me the sickest bit of footage I've ever seen in my life.
I'm sure Steve saw it. I'm sure everyone saw it. We will put a link up on our Facebook page. I don't want to.
I have parental controls on my computer at home, so my internet wasn't allowed to see what you just showed me. But if I had to sum it up in one word, the word would be...
Ted Cruz. Talking and...
A TED Talk? Was this a TED Talk?
No, this was not a TED Talk. It was less exciting.
Oh, all right.
And there was... All right, you know when people talk and sometimes they get that little white ball on the bottom of their
lip? No, Emily Latella, tell me
exactly.
More.
Exactly. It got a little itty-bitty sweat ball and it wouldn't fall off.
Yeah?
That's exactly whom I thought of.
She should, only Emily Latella should deliver the news of what you just showed me.
Ted Cruz, it you know, and I've seen people have, like, God, I, you know, this is where ADHD is not fun, because you're at school and a teacher has one of those and you're wondering, when is it going to come off their lip, and what do they do with it? This is beyond that. This looks like a little bit of something dripping out of Ted Cruz's nose onto his lip, and it's there, and everybody's noticing it. And what do you do in that instance? You eat it.
Well, it seemed that that was the route he took.
But what do you do when you... Do you feel it? Do you know it's there? Was it really a booger?
I would have just quickly done that hand over the face thing, right? Wouldn't that have made more sense to just quickly, you know, either pretended you were thinking about something and moved your hand to your face and brushed up? That's if he knew it was there. Maybe he didn't even know it was there.
Although, wouldn't he look up on the monitor? That's, I guess, what I want to know. Did he look up on the monitor and see something dripping? And you're right. At that point, you just kind of, you know, rub
cover your...
A quick
like,
As I would... Because really, it's just... It was like watching a baby bird eat a worm.
Are you talking about like that spitball on his lip?
Yes!
Yep.
Yeah, it was just a spit... It gets whiter because there's not, I don't know, as much... liquid in it or something. I used to have I had a college professor. We'd watch it travel from top to bottom.
But in this race, in this particular election,
is that a make or break deal?
Any other year that would be a huge story, but this time around, it's just throw it on the pile. It doesn't even faze anybody.
We've seen, you know, watch these guys so much more than typical. I mean,
right?
If you watch Marco Rubio too, remember Marco? When he gave the response to the State of the Union, he had to stop to get a drink of water.
Yeah.
So if you watch him, he has a dry mouth thing or something. Yeah. So if you see him, if he's speaking, you see him just sort of try to will some liquid sometimes, you know? But we've watched these guys so much that we're seeing these little tiny idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, but this seems to be dripping from his nose.
No, and, I don't think so.
During the 11th Republican debate, there was plenty of mindless anger, misinformed talking points, and ridiculous accusations flying around. Such things can be depressing, but it's important not to distract from the most important thing to happen that evening. Senator Ted Cruz ate a booger on national TV from USUncut.com. Cruz was in the middle of appealing to voters, saying, "I understand the folks who are supporting Donald. You're angry at Washington," and he uses angry rhetoric. At this particular point in the speech, Ted Cruz decided he'd been waiting on his feast long enough. Ignoring the crowd's horrified screams, he calmly ate his own booger and continued to make his point. Perhaps Cruz was concerned that his plan to demolish the public sector for ideological purposes wasn't quite repellent enough. Still don't believe it. A closer look.
Well, you showed me the video. I can't identify exactly what it was. It's something foreign on his upper lip that then travels to his lower lip and then gets ingested. But
it's like a snake tongue comes out and
it's a spitball.
But it's a different-looking spitball than I'm used to seeing on professors. Usually that is more round and white, and it's stuck on your lip, not dripping.
I love that this website you're showing me has given it the Zapruder film treatment. You can watch it forwards and backwards as slowly as you want to just to determine what it is.
USUncut.com.
Yeah.
Holly seems to know what it is. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I had to look it up as soon as you talked about it, and believe me, I hate him, and I don't want to defend him.
But
I think it, you know, it looks like a piece of food.
It could be food. It could be.
Was he eating something in the middle of his speech?
He may have had a donut before.
Maybe he had it stuck in his tooth.
Oh.
You know, and it kind of popped out of his mouth.
I know, it's really gross.
So it was really gross. But, you know, in his defense, I think that's what it was, and I don't want to defend him.
Sure, but everybody's defending the booger eating because he's running against Trump.
Yeah.
So what can we say? You know, what can we say in this race?
I feel sorry for him.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
No, don't feel sorry for him.
Not enough to vote for him, though, right?
No.
He deserves worse than this, so.
Thank you, Holly. Sorry you had to see that. I know it's bad before lunch.
Yeah. When we come back, there's a moment from last night's debate that's getting a lot of scrutiny.
And, more than
and
this?
Maybe different than this. Not more or less, just different. We'll examine that next. If you want to call in 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN TV. It's us. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. A correction needs to be made. I've made a grievous error. We were talking about Ted Cruz's nutritional habits the other day.
Somebody said it's, you know, aren't you supposed to eat your greens?
Oh, no.
Thank you, texters.
I said this is the kind of thing that Emily Latella should be informing us of, but I'm wrong. It should be Rosanna Dana.
Absolutely.
Gilda Radner characters for 300, Alex. My mistake. Now, last night there was a Democratic debate that was held in Flint, Michigan, at a beautiful theater, by the way. I know that Flint has hit on some hard times, but that theater where they did the CNN debate last night was nothing short of stunning. I don't know what it is. I've never seen it before, but boy, was that a pretty place.
Did they build it just for that?
No.
Did they spruce it up just for that?
I have a feeling they probably spruced it up a little bit, but it looked really good. Anyway, I watched most of the debate, and even though they have been extremely civil toward each other, last night had its moments where that was not the case. It got very, very heated a couple of times last night, which I guess is fine.
Don't you want that sort of?
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot at stake.
Put the passion behind it.
Yeah. You had a few moments there where they really were taking some serious digs at each other, a lot more than I was accustomed to from Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. But the moment I want to talk about, and I saw this and I was thinking it at the time, and then I read about it last night, and then there's more that's been written about it this morning, is there was an exchange, one of the more heated moments of the debate, where they were talking about the bailouts that the government has gone through over the last couple of years. You had the auto industry bailout, and then you had the bank bailout, and they were at odds for the most part about how that money should have been appropriated. At one point, and we'll play the audio for you, and you can kind of decide for yourself if you didn't see the debate. you know, the structure is the question is asked of one of the candidates, and then the other one gets a moment to rebut what the first one said, and then that can go on for quite a while. That's exactly what was happening. You were getting a question asked, and then back and forth and back and forth. And at one point, as Bernie Sanders was speaking his mind, Hillary Clinton interrupted with something she wanted to interject with, and he held up his hand and he said, "Excuse me, I'm talking." And then he continued, and it got a bit of reaction from the audience.
Positive?
Not necessarily. So here's the moment if you didn't hear it, and then let's talk a little bit about it. This is from last night's debate in Flint, Michigan. Listen.
I voted to save the auto industry. He voted against the money that ended up saving the auto industry. Oh. I think that is a pretty big difference.
Well, if you are talking about the Wall Street bailout, where some of your friends destroyed this economy.
You know.
Oh, excuse me, I'm talking.
Let him sprung.
So you hear the crowd in an oh no you didn't moment where they're like, you can't be with excuse me, I'm talking.
Well, he kind of groaned as she was talking. He kind of said a little something to like, oh. So it kind of opened the floodgates.
It did. In all fairness, it did. But here's the question I present to you. Is that a moment because it's a man versus a woman in a debate, or would that have been as heated if it were two men or two women up there and one interrupted the other? What's your take on that? How do you read that moment there?
I don't see it in any sexist type
you
fashion,
don't.
No.
You don't?
Really? You don't think the reaction is different because it's a woman?
I don't think so, because sometimes I forget she's a woman, that voice, I'm telling you.
But he comes across, and Steve, I don't know if you were watching it or if you heard it for the first time.
I've heard it a few times.
He came across, and he is not, I wouldn't put him in the category of bully in any way,
no.
shape, or form, but he, for those brief seconds where he did that and he held his hand up like, my turn, which I guess that's the structure of a debate. But I think he came across as being something of a bully there.
Well, and it's unfair to him, and it's not her, it's us. The way we hear it, I think.
Yeah.
Can I hear it again? Can we hear it again for those of us who didn't see
it?
Yeah.
Sure.
And when you listen, pretend it's Ted Cruz and Donald Trump.
Yeah. Because you're right. That's what I was thinking as it was happening. There was a lot running through my head. Like, please keep this debate a little more civil, first of all. But just the interchange between them. And I'm chalking it up to he's a guy, she's a girl. That's what made it uncomfortable for me. Let's play it again. You can listen.
Against the money that ended up saving the auto industry.
Oh.
I think that is a pretty big difference.
Well, if you are talking about the Wall Street bailout, where some of your friends destroyed this economy.
You know.
Oh, excuse me, I'm talking.
Let him sprung.
If you're going to.
They applauded him.
You hear
for
a mixture there.
I hear more applause.
Oh, that's funny, Wendy. I don't hear it. I hear it more like, ooh, that
See,
was a bad.
I there hear was, it like, but, yes, you're getting her. Isn't that weird, the male-female point of view?
Yeah.
I think the breakdown was more his supporters versus her supporters than men versus women. But watching it at home last night, I was a little bit uncomfortable. And I like him a lot. I like both of them.
Yeah.
But I was uncomfortable with it, even though he didn't say, hey, a man is talking, that's almost the read I got, which I hope I'm wrong. But
you see my point, right? That's the exchange that Rubio and Bush and Cruz and Trump, those guys have been having for
constantly
months. And so we only hear it differently,
yeah,
because we hear it as a guy talking to a woman. I don't think either of them probably heard it that way.
No, and I sure didn't. In fact, I heard it. You know, it got personal because he's like, oh, your friends, you know,
yeah,
that
right.
got kind of personal.
Right.
But then when he said, I'm talking, I heard it more as, yeah, you tell her.
I was fine with that bailout included some of your friends. I was fine with that. It was the, I'm talking now. No, even though that's the structure of a debate, it made me a little uncomfortable and it made me think, what will this be like? Should it be Trump versus Hillary Clinton? What will that be like? Because he doesn't seem to want to.
He'll say, shut up, bitch.
you may hear that.
I didn't take that to be anything against her. And I feel sorry for her. Her voice is shot. She sounds like she's reprimanding a lot of times when she's talking anyway. And she is hoarse.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear it as a sexist thing at all. In fact, I heard it as people going, you go get her.
Oh, maybe.
You know, again, I didn't see it, but just listening to the audio. And really, maybe guys and girls have different views of that.
Yeah.
Karen wants to jump in on this. Hi, Karen.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Okay, I took it as my turn to talk.
Then that's it.
You know, enough said. My turn to talk. You're interrupting me. And it doesn't have anything to do with male or female. And, you know, I think they are under some pressure to compete with the antics that go on with the other group, you know. And so
where does that pressure come from, do you think?
Well, they're on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And the Republicans are pulling all the stops out. So,
well, that exactly. They are never between the two of them. I think he's a gentleman, and but he also needed to be heard. It's my turn to talk. And when, you know, somebody plows on, sometimes you think, okay, is that person deaf? Or they're choosing not to listen to me, you know, whatever it is. But it wasn't a call down, and I wouldn't have taken it as that,
okay.
You know, if I were her.
And she interrupted him. I mean,
she did. She rightfully did. It's my turn to talk. You know, who's the adult in this group? This is called basic manners.
And Bill,
my
when you heard it, you weren't offended by it, but you were worried that it was going to be offensive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's the same thing. So maybe it's just.
But again, I'll say they are under pressure to compete with the antics that go on with the Republicans, you know, so they've got to ramp it up a little bit.
I guess so.
If this is they're ramping it up, well, that was mild in comparison to, you know, where it's going to go.
It really was. And
Thank you, Karen.
If you look at the ratings for the debates, the ratings on the Republican debates are blowing the Democratic debates out of the water. I mean, and the reason is obvious. People are watching because it's
more flash.
There's more flash. There's more friction. And I guess it makes for a more interesting evening of watching, I guess.
Everybody's been saying how boring the Democratic debates are.
Well, last night's was not boring. I mean, and to be honest, there have been moments in both of them that are boring and not boring. But there was a lot more fury last night than I was used to seeing on the Democratic side.
815 agrees with you. And Steve, be honest, if he interrupted a man, we would not be having this conversation.
True.
I don't hear it as any sexism whatsoever.
Not at all. All
right. No, I mean, she said something. Now, I mean, he did groan in the background. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
And then it was his turn to speak. What did the moderator say?
It was Anderson Cooper. He just let that play out.
But he said something like, wait, let him talk something?
Yeah, at some point. Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
she interrupted him. They each have their own thing to talk.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything wrong with what he did.
All right. Okay. I just wonder if now with his advisors, if they say to him, hey, just to keep the perception of you as a gentleman, when a situation like that arises, maybe handle it differently. I wonder if that's what's happening today.
Someone says she was talking when the sound bite started. It wasn't his turn to talk. She played a sound bite.
I'm not sure what that means.
I think they mean that I played the sound bite. She was the one talking.
Oh, at the very beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, that just had to do with, I think the original question went her way. It was about bailouts. And like I said, the structure is such that one candidate gets the question and then there's a quick rebuttal back and forth, back and forth. And Anderson Cooper did a good job of, on some of the more heated topics, and this was one of them, of letting them keep going back and forth. So.
312, it definitely didn't come across as sexist. 630, I just lost it. They're coming in so fast and furious. She interrupted him. Nothing wrong with that saying.
So that was allowed and legal.
815, right. My husband shushes me the same way, so I didn't think anything about it. Ha-ha.
Oh, all right. That's from Alice Cramden, who's texting in from the moon.
That's all I have.
All right, all right.
At least they're talking about issues and not name-calling or size.
Right. Right.
Which is true.
There were no anatomical mentions at all during last night's debate. Not a one.
And pretty sad where debates are, when they're actually talking about the issues, are considered boring. I'm just saying what I've heard everywhere.
No, that's true.
I didn't say they were.
Right. All right. A quick break. Steve with the news, and then Eric Zorn will be joining us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thank you. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, and we are joined by the feisty Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. You are nothing but feisty, Eric.
I'm ready for bear.
Yep.
Can I tell you, this is the one that should stick and we should use all the time. I think you hit your stride
here.
This
could be the one.
That'll work. That might work.
Yep. I like it.
Yeah.
Feisty.
Is there more feist going on in the United States right now than in recent years? It seems like there is.
I think the feistiness level is high. Yeah. I think we're at about 95%. Maybe we've hit peak feisty. I don't know.
I hope not. I hope there's always room for a little more feist, I would hope.
I hope a little more feist. Wasn't there, isn't there a pop singer feist?
Feist, yeah, she's very good. Yeah. She's great.
1, 2, 3, 4, right?
Is that wow, very nice. Wow.
Is there really a song and an artist?
An artist named Feist, yeah. Wow. She's good.
You guys are hip.
Yeah,
oh, and
totally
feisty.
Are. We totally are.
We're going to a rave right after the show, Eric and I are. You wanted to talk about, and this is a great story, our President Barack Obama and his support in the state rep race, which you rarely, if ever, see, right?
I've never seen this happen before. I've never seen a sitting president of the United States get involved in a state rep race.
What's in it for him?
Well, this is the Chicago's 5th House District, and it runs from, I think, Division Street on the north down to like 79th Street on the south. It's a long, narrow state rep district. And the current state rep is a Democrat named Ken Duncan, D-U-N-K, and like the donuts. Mm-hmm. And he's African-American, and his challenger is African-American. It's a little bit more than 50% African-American district. And Duncan is a Democrat, but he's been voting against Mike Madigan. He's been voting against the majority Democrats in some key votes that have really angered Madigan. And as he's gone along, he's gotten more and more defiant. And he's just basically taken away the potential power that Mike Madigan had to override some of Rauner's vetoes.
Right.
And sort of in that sense, he has contributed to the stalemate. A lot of people applaud him. Forces for the Republicans are applauding Duncan because he's helping Rauner, stand fast against the Democrats. In a sense, he's become a Republican. And he's backed in this race. He's running against the Democratic candidate, Juliana Stratton, who is she's a UIC professor. She's an anti-violence coordinator. She's got a pretty impressive resume. She's an attorney. And so she's backed by the Democrats. And Rauner and his Republican friends have poured, I think it's like $1 million or so or more now. I haven't seen the latest figures into this campaign. And the Democrats have poured a similar amount of money. Lots and lots. You're going to be seeing this on your TV, these ads for this one narrow Chicago district. But it's become this proxy fight between Governor Rauner and Mike Madigan, and between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Yeah.
And the reason it's so important is Duncan has split from the Democrats on some key votes. And Rauner wants to reward him for that.
Yeah.
And Madigan wants to punish him for that. And that's really important going forward because, you're looking at, are the people saying, who's going to break ranks? Are any of the Republicans going to break ranks? Are any Democrats going to break ranks to come to some sort of other resolution to the... I mean, we're going into, our 9th month now without a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And every day in the paper, all these stories about human services not being funded, higher education not
getting
funded.
It's shameful, isn't it?
It's really bad. And, yeah. and this primary, this particular race is going to tell us, where the voters are and where the strength is.
Mm-hmm.
So can Madigan hold firm or can Rauner break that hold? And the thinking is that if he can keep Ken Duncan in office, then that's going to create a bit of a snowball effect for him, which is he's going to be able to get more and more Democrats to peel off. They'll be brave. They'll feel emboldened to peel off. So this morning, we see that President Obama has cut radio and TV spots for Juliana Stratton, the challenger to Duncan, which again is unprecedented. And I think Kevin said he had a little bit of.
Do you have one, Kevin?
For that, can we hear a little bit of that?
30 years ago, I came to Chicago to help strengthen our community. One of the biggest lessons I learned is that follow through is everything. The people of Chicago deserve leaders who follow through. Juliana Stratton has spent her career serving our community, improving the juvenile justice system, and protecting public safety. Juliana will fight to get guns off our streets and fight for tougher penalties for violent offenders. I'm Barack Obama. I'm asking you to vote for Democrat Juliana Stratton for state representative.
You guys can send the bill to the Stratton campaign.
Right.
I think they have the money to cover it. But
how does it get to the point where, who approaches the president and lets him know that they want to take this measure? Because, like we said, this doesn't usually happen in a state rep race.
So obviously, the president is well tied into Chicago and Illinois. He's close with Rahm Emanuel. He's close with David Axelrod.
Yeah.
So I'm sure
he's already aware of it.
Another thing happened about this. Remember when President Obama came to Springfield? Was it about a month ago? I can't remember what the date was.
For his last Or his anniversary or something?
Give a speech. Yeah, he came in. Yes, exactly. So it had to be, what, the 12th of February or something like that.
When he was sworn in, yeah.
Something like that. So he came down and gave a speech to the General Assembly, and one of the things he was talking about was bipartisanship.
Right.
He was saying that you should be able to be independent, to be bipartisan, and not be shamed for your actions. And so when he says this, Ken Duncan, like, sort of stands up and says, yeah, like Obama is praising him. And Obama turns and says, sit down, Duncan.
Right.
I'll talk to you.
Oh, remember we wondered who
we
Duncan was.
We thought it was Duncan Keith.
We
Wendy
did.
And I were sure we're Duncan.
Arnie Duncan,
Keith.
Duncan, yeah. So, Arnie Duncan, someone
Arnie Duncan,
thought.
Right. No,
but that's
it,
who
it
is.
Ken
this.
Duncan.
Oh. Right.
And so, but Duncan continued to use this. He was telling people that Obama was singling him out for praise.
Yeah.
And it was pretty obvious to everyone in the audience that Obama was, first of all, was really not happy about what Duncan had been doing and was telling him to sit down.
Yeah.
And you said, we'll
talk later.
It
got a lot of response.
And you solved a big mystery.
And now we're finding out what that talk later is, which is this ad. And I think it's going to be a pretty important ad. There was a story in the Sun-Times this morning that Duncan has been accused of buying votes, giving people $50
votes. That would never happen here in Illinois,
not in Chicago.
Ever.
I think they got the wrong town. But I mean, and that's an interesting development. And I haven't seen any firsthand. And I've seen what's out there. I don't have an independent judgment about that, but I think it's not going to play well either. But this ad is going to land really, really hard.
Could you even do that? Could you give somebody money to vote? Because you wouldn't, once they're in the booth, you don't know who they voted for.
I would just take the money and say, sure,
yeah,
I got
I'll vote
your back.
Right.
Well, no, you can't do that. Is the short answer to your question.
You can't do that on several levels.
Yes.
Right? You shouldn't do that. You
but
can't,
you can't
do
tell
that.
What, you can't tell if they're going to pull a Wendy on you, as they say, where you get into the booth and vote who you want for. But.
Well, what? Why? It's a deal. If I take their money, I have to vote for who they say, who I say.
Well, again, it's not an enforceable contract.
Shady to shady.
Exactly. But you'd be telling them.
Oh, yeah, I got your back.
Interesting
whatever you
thing
need.
About this 5th District, though, is that it went about 80-20 for Pat Quinn last time. So
did
it's
it?
Not a rounder district. It's
right.
A heavily Democrat. It's a Chicago African-American district. And it's heavily Democratic. It went heavily for Governor Quinn. And of course, last time Duncan won by 80% because I don't think he had token opposition. So again, this is the one race. If you were to look at one race, it's really, really going to be interesting on election night. This is the one to see. There are a couple of other places. There's a district downstate around Springfield where there's a Republican lawmaker who has broken occasionally with Rauner.
Yeah.
And Rauner's people are after him big time. They
I would imagine.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars going into these campaigns. So it's a question of, like, if you step out of line. I mean, the message to legislators in both parties is, if you step out of line too much, we're going to come down on you.
Yeah.
I will say this, that there are a couple of House members, Jack Franks up in Marengo, Scott Drury up in Highwood, who have voted against Madigan at times.
Oh, yeah?
And Madigan, I think Madigan's not happy about it, but I think he respects them. He respects the fact that these are principled votes. And one of the interesting things about Duncan is he doesn't seem to have any principle behind his votes. He just seems to be yanking Madigan's chain. Franks comes from a moderate district, and he votes his conscience, and my point is that Madigan is not necessarily going after everyone who crosses him at every time. He's going after a guy who really has defied him.
It seems so. Wait, hold that thought. More with Eric Zorn if you have any questions or comments, because we're getting a lot of calls. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls and your texts next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Feisty Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn is our guest. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call or text in. Some good questions on the line. Let's go to line one. I don't know your name. I'm sorry. It's not up on the screen. Who
is this?
This
is Nina.
Nina?
Yes.
There you are, Nina. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
My understanding is that it is a law to have a balanced budget passed by the state Congress. So my question is, why haven't they been prosecuted or, impeached for not doing
we're
breaking the law?
Eric?
Well, they would have to impeach themselves, which they're not going to do. I mean, Nina raises a good point, which is it is the law. It's in the state constitution that the General Assembly and the governor have to get together and pass a budget. And we're 9 months overdue on that. They're probably not even going to have a budget for fiscal 2016, which ends on June 30th. So, but I think the relevant question then is, is why hasn't anyone sued them on this? Because they, you could sue them on a constitutional violation. You take them to court.
Who sues them? Well, do they have to sue themselves?
Well, you have to have what's called standing, which means that you have to prove that you have been injured by this. But I think at this point you could have.
Let's all get together. Class action suit.
Perhaps not the people around this table, or maybe not Nina, but certainly some of these students at Chicago State University, or some of the people who are served by many of the human services organizations that have lost their funding in this budget stalemate. They could sue. I'm not sure why anyone hasn't, but that's, I think,
because
it's a good
if
idea.
We win the lawsuit, they say we don't have a budget, we can't pay you, so it would be impossible to win anything.
We can't afford to send our attorneys because we can't. I mean, it would be an interesting separation of powers issue, but
that can't be. If they don't have the money, then they have to get it somewhere, because we can't go on. I mean, this is wrong.
Oh yeah. Is it Pennsylvania? Is that the other state? There's two states in the union that don't have budgets, us and I think Pennsylvania.
I think it's Pennsylvania, yeah. So I mean, I share Nita's flabbergast about this, that there hasn't been any motion forward on this in terms of the legal obligation that the state has. It's not like the Constitution suggests that maybe if they want to, the governor and General Assembly should get together and get a budget. It says they shall do this.
Yeah.
And they have not.
Great question, Nina. Thank you so much.
How long could we potentially go without a budget? I didn't think it would go this long, but it has.
Nobody thought it would go this long. It's startling. And there's nothing that really is forcing their hand right now, because 90% of state spending is being covered by court orders and other agreements. So it's only this 10% that's not being covered. And the problem with all this is that because we don't have a new budget, we're spending at the rate of the old budget. And the old budget was predicated on higher tax revenues. Our state income tax level went from 5% to 3.75%. It dropped on January 1st. So we're getting in money. The money that's coming in is less than it used to be. But the money going out is 90% of what it was.
Right.
And meaning that I think the Civic Federation said we're falling behind by about $33 million a day.
Yeah.
We're spending more. We're still spending $33 million a day because of all these agreements, because of the agreements through the courts and the various parties, things they are going to fund.
Yeah.
So we're falling further and further behind, meaning that the problem gets harder and harder to solve with cuts and tax increases. So the cuts have to be deeper and the tax increases have to be greater when we finally do solve the problem. The answer to your question on how long can this go? Nobody knows. We're already in uncharted territory. I mean, could it go 4 years? I mean, Rauner's going to be governor for another 3 years. It's possible. No one right now sees what's going to break the logjam.
Amazing. We only have a minute, Eric. This is the craziest presidential race of all time. Is there a particular story from the past week that stands out to you? What's your favorite?
I wanted to read a couple of my favorite tweets. So you have 30 seconds.
Sure.
How about the Republicans haven't got a single candidate who could survive a Willy Wonka factory tour? it's from Cagrox. In high school, Ted Cruz could have been voted most likely to be seen walking on the beach in his dress shoes. And here's one that I accidentally pressed 2 for Spanish and Donald Trump's security team came out of nowhere to deport me. And this is just a question somebody raises. When are the people who say Barack Hussein Obama going to start referring to Rafael Edward Cruz?
Oh, interesting.
Ted Cruz's name is Rafael Edward Cruz.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the Barack Hussein Obama people are going to come
very,
at me.
Very, very funny.
Anyway, there's some great stuff on Twitter. I can bring some of those in every week if you want. I'm feeling feisty. You know?
Well, you are feisty. You can't fight that. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get a chance. Thank you, Eric.
Good to see you guys.
We'll take a quick break and find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Second half of our show for a Monday. We're at 312-981-7200. If you'd like to participate, we would love to have you.
Do I have to participate?
You have to participate. You don't have any say in it. Your name is on the product. That would be like Ronald McDonald saying, I'd prefer it if you kept my face off your packages, please. I don't want to be a part of this.
Again, I find it shocking that all the fast food places have redheaded mascots.
That is strange.
Wendy, Ronald.
And your Burger King.
Although I don't think, did the Burger King always have red hair? I know his face was not plastic last time I checked.
There's been a couple of incarnations of him, and you're right. I don't know that they always are, but now it's very fashionable.
He's a little scary looking now.
A little.
Oh, a lot.
I mean, yeah, he's gone. Talk about transformation. Maybe he's had some work done because he looks really scary.
Oh, that's what you call plastic surgery.
Yeah, seriously.
Don't you wonder, because at some point, you know, a commercial just doesn't have, they don't just make it and put it on TV. There's people up at the company that watch it in meetings and try to decide exactly.
You'd hope.
You would imagine. So what was going on in the boardroom when Burger King presented to them a really scary looking Burger King? Because he is scary looking. I'm fine with it. I know it's not real. I know it's a guy in a plastic outfit.
Can I tell you, when I look at a picture of Chucky and the Burger King, I can't decide who's scarier. Another ginger, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. There was a gingers in my house too.
Oh, you do?
Yes,
you do.
I do too. They're scary.
Remember when Quiznos for a while had some sort of rodents as their spokesperson? Do you remember this for about a year?
No.
The singing things.
Yeah, they were singing. They would go, "We have a pepper bar." They would say that because at Quiznos at the time, after you had a sandwich there, after you ordered a sandwich, they had a pepper bar that you could go to and put various kinds of peppers on it. So the people at Quiznos decided how better to sell this idea than to have rats sing about it on a commercial. It was the weirdest.
Is that why they've gone under?
I don't know. I have no idea. Are they all? I hope they're not all gone, because I used to really enjoy Quiznos despite the singing spokes rats. This is it. Listen. That's
Quiznos
it.
New Santa Fe trio subs.
There are two Quiznos still in operation. One, 164 West Division, one 1332 South Halsted. That might
They're
be
down
it.
To two. But again, the process was Quiznos saying, how do we get forth the idea that somebody eating at a restaurant could add peppers to their sandwich? And they said, well, singing rats would probably be the best way to do it. And you heard it. It sounds like a bunch of frat boys with a guitar. It doesn't sound like an agency put that together.
No, I don't even remember
that. You don't remember that?
And you know where Quiznos is still happening big time?
Where?
Colorado.
Oh,
so they don't care if rodents are singing about the pepper bar. Just give me a sandwich.
Apparently they just need some munchies out there.
That's right.
So true. Very, very true. Kim did the story in the news about Peyton Manning retiring. I guess it's no surprise. There was a little bit of hope that they might possibly either Denver would re-sign him or he would find a home somewhere else. I know I've told you this quite a bit. In my opinion, if he's not the best quarterback I ever saw, and that says a lot because I've seen some really great quarterbacks over the years, he would be the one guy that I would put money, if it was down to one quarterback for one game and I could pick any quarterback I ever saw, it would be Peyton Manning. I thought he was so gifted in so many ways. And even toward the end, I mean, he just won a Super Bowl and he was, I don't know, maybe operating at 40 or 45%. He didn't have a good game. He didn't have a great season, but he still got it done and he won the Super Bowl. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up. I can't think of too many guys that ended their career on a championship note. It doesn't usually play out that way in any sport, but he's one of those guys. He quarterbacked the Denver Broncos to a Super Bowl championship, and then he retires. Is there a better way to end your career than winning a championship? That's perfect.
That is a smart way to end your career. However, many people, including I would be one of them, you go one louder. You know what I mean?
Know.
Like, you should. It's perfect for him to retire right now. But a lot of people would take the fame and the glory and go, I'm going to do it one more year, and then you fizzle out your final denouement.
Do you know why... I say in English to your French. Do you know why? Do you know why it's so? It's got to be, if you're a pro athlete, and this is just a guess because I've never been one, but saying goodbye to the game has to be almost impossible. When you're a guy like Peyton Manning, and you can make comparisons in any sport. I guess locally we could say this about Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was the best basketball player of all time. And then in the end,
he came back to play baseball.
Yeah,
and that
he played
didn't go
baseball.
So well.
He came back. But saying goodbye to the sport that you love so much and that loves you so much, and you realize to yourself, what can I ever do again that will bring me what this sport brought me? It must be impossible to say goodbye.
Except your body wears out. Luckily in radio, we don't ever have to say goodbye.
Right.
Until we're dead, and then maybe they'll find out a way to digitally enhance us so we don't even have to end
They're
doing
working
it.
On that as we speak.
But seriously, your body gives... Look at poor Ed Obradovich when he walks around. He can hardly walk.
I know.
Keith Van Horn is, I mean, all these old football players that aren't even old. I shouldn't even say that.
Right.
So Peyton Manning has had numerous back surgeries, neck surgeries. Yeah. I don't know that it's that hard for him to put it behind him. And then when he looks at his bank book, I'm
well,
good.
There's that. I know. I remember over the years, and we almost had a moment with Peyton Manning weeping up a little bit, but Mike Schmidt was the one who played for the Phillies, their third baseman, who at the press conference announcing, you know, that he was hanging it up, just lost it and started to cry, and everybody made fun of him and like, oh no, I so totally get that. That guy, he loves to play baseball. He just loves it.
Why did he get made fun of so badly?
I always
Men
chalk it
cry.
Up.
Hi, hello.
I think it's because it was a moment of weakness from a guy we're not used to seeing being weak. But people ripped him to shreds. Do you remember?
Totally. And when you think about it, what's so bad? It was emotional.
I know.
You can't turn off your tears when it's coming from your heart.
That's so true.
I mean, there are people that fake cry, okay? But when it's coming from your heart,
right.
You can't stop it.
I think for the rest of us, it's like if you took the one thing that you're really, really great at and you've had the most joy at doing for years and years and your whole life, you were headed in a certain direction, and that's to play that game, and then all of a sudden you realize, I've played my last game. I'll never walk on that field again and feel the adulation from fans. It's got to just be crushing, you know? I can't even imagine what that must feel like. So I'll miss him tremendously. I know football fans, he played against us. Whenever he played against us, even though I'm supposed to be rooting for the hometown team, I would watch him and I go, I wish so badly we had that guy on our team. I would love to have had him play for the Bears at some point. All right, so he is hanging up, as we mentioned. Peyton Manning is calling it a career. It really isn't.
Perfect time.
But what a bunch of great years and great seasons behind him. All right, we'll take a quick break. We have a full show for you. If you want to jump in, we welcome you at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, we're talking about a couple of different topics all at once. That's what we do. Who has time for one topic?
We are a plethora of things. Potpourri, you can say I'm wrong, as plethora and potpourri if you'd like. It's up to you. But we have a text that I really don't use the term ginger ever. I really don't. I have a redheaded son. Kim has two redheaded people in her family.
Ironically, your son's name is Ginger.
Well, we came out with Ginger Baker, who had red hair. But I never...
Kim, both of your sons have red hair?
Two out of three.
Oh, wow. How about that?
It's an oddity. Right. It's a rarity. It's, you know, you wonder how it happens.
And people can't help but like to go up and touch their hair. Does that happen to your kids all the time? Like, they always rub their head.
And this is the quote they get all the time. I could never get that color in a bottle.
My mom used to, speaking of that, my mom used to take pieces of my kids' hair when she'd go get her hair colored and say, this is what I want.
Now, I can't speak for you, Kim, but in Wendy's case, Wendy had a long affair with Alfred E. Newman. I guess that's okay to talk about on the air at this point, isn't it?
Well, it's funny because people always feel the need when they look at Jim, who's got brown hair, well, gray now, and me, it's all different colors. Oh, where'd the red hair come from? And then, you know, I don't know. What about the mailman? No, our mailman didn't have red hair either.
Interesting.
Same thing. I used to say it's the UPS man because we don't have a milkman anymore.
And the sweet woman, when I went, Michael was born, it was funny because my mom passed away a month after I was married. And then a year later, I had Michael, and my mom always loved redheads. And I teased her and said, you know, if I get a redhead, I'm sending them back. So as soon as Michael was delivered, you know, Jim looked down at Michael and looked at me and said, your mother got her wish.
Oh.
And so you go back to get tests for the baby, and then you have people working at a hospital who look at you holding a baby with the baby carrier,
right.
And they look at your stomach, which is not deflated, and they say, oh, when are you due?
Sure.
And you say, what?
Yeah, that's nice.
I just had it.
What a compliment.
But some older woman was in the waiting room and said, you know what they say about redheads? And we're like, no, we just had them. We don't really know what. It means you didn't do it enough. And we're like, what?
People say that?
That's what this woman said. You didn't do it enough. What do you mean? Yeah, a little bit rusty.
Oh, that's amusing.
If it's not at all.
Yeah.
But I really have never said ginger. I've always said redhead. I know that South Park had a thing where gingers have no soul. And,
people don't like gingers if they're redhead. They don't like to be called that.
Remember the stories a couple of years ago where schools would have like Kick a Ginger Day or something where they could just
that
go up to kids?
That was South Park too.
Is that where that started from? So the rule was you were just allowed to go up to somebody who had red hair and kick them? That was a thing?
So 224, I was talking about the Burger King and Ronald McDonald and
Wendy.
Of Wendy's fame, who they're all gingers. And this 224 takes issue with that and says, as a natural redhead for 50 years, let me just say I hate, all caps, this new term ginger. I'm a redhead, plain and simple. Should we call blondes bananas?
Yes.
Call me a banana.
I would be more comfortable if blondes were referred to as bananas.
So then you asked where that term came from.
I have no idea. I know when I was a kid, nobody ever used it. And then all of a sudden, people started using it, but I don't know the origin.
Well, I went to HuffingtonPost.co.uk, British Huffington Post.
The British Huffington Post.
You want to know where the term came from?
Please.
A lot of speculation has put the ginger nickname down to ginger root, used in cooking to give it a bit of a kick. Which is red-ish.
Well, yeah,
it's actually
yellow
if you move the skin.
Yeah, I mean, we know it came from the from that sort of ginger, but there's so many other things that are red. Redheads aren't called tomatoes.
Yeah, but ginger isn't really red. It's
yellowish. It's more yellowish. Yeah.
The skin on it is red, but some think this is because redheads are believed to have a fiery temper and can pack a punch.
Well, that's true.
Another
Do you know how many fights I got into with Maureen O'Hara over the years? She would just walk up to me and slug me.
Archie Andrews never got in a fight. It was always Reggie.
Right, that's true.
And Moose.
Right.
Another theory follows ginger-flavored food, which tend to show a warm reddish tinge. Ginger cake, gingerbread, ginger snaps. Again, ginger is...
But still looks brown to me.
It does.
Or yellowish.
If they were going for something more red, why they're not called raspberries or anything like that. Why ginger?
Well, this will interest you, Bill. American TV has also been cited as influencing a factor towards redheads.
Right.
60s sitcom Gilligan's Island followed two single attractive females, Marianne and Ginger. Yep. Ginger, of course, had red hair and pale skin, while Marianne donned a brunette mop.
Yeah, Ginger Grant was the... obviously
I didn't know that was her last name.
Grant? Yeah. She was a starlet. She was so... I mean, she was so obviously patterned after Marilyn Monroe...
With red hair, yeah. Others still believe that ginger originated much earlier. In fact, it could be more than 200 years old, with 18th and 19th century references, according to OED Online. During this time, Britain occupied parts of Malaysia, home to the red ginger plant, which could be the original namesake. Whatever the origination, redheads must accept the nickname as a description instead of fearing its connotations, and they should embrace its individuality and genetic rarity.
All right, if they say so.
Do your kids mind when they're called gingers? Because my son doesn't like it.
I mean, they're kind of used to it now. They just blow it off. But, you know, when they were little, they hated it.
So that phraseology has been around since your kids were little, Kim? Because swear, I think the first time I heard it was maybe 10 years ago, 10, 11, 12 years ago.
Oh, no, I've heard it for a long time.
That long.
I've also referred to, like, gingers called gingies.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between the two?
I don't know. You know, my sister lives in Israel, and all Israelis call redheads gingies versus gingers.
Hmm. Do gingers get gingivitis?
That would be peculiar.
That would be predisposed to gingivitis?
Right. That's what the doctor tells you as soon as the baby's born. I want to warn you right now, your child will probably have gingivitis.
And you've not done it enough. You're rusty.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a lot of show coming up for you. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to join in. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can we get nostalgic?
I would like to, yes. How come?
Well, I want to tell you, I wonder if anybody would know this sound. Kim might without looking.
Kim, what do you think that is? Don't look.
I want to say like beans shaking in a milk container.
Why?
Beans in a milk container is Kim's guess.
I don't know.
It's a product that's probably in your pantry.
Is there some sort of nostalgia for beans in a milk container?
Everybody loves
Did
that.
Did you have your own band where you needed a large maracas?
Morocco
Mole.
Yeah.
This is something that I have in my cabinet right now.
This should be a game show on the Game Show Network where you just shake something and people have to guess what you're shaking.
What if I'm shaking my booty?
That would be the bonus round.
All right. Can I just tell you something that I thought was pretty interesting? When we talked about
Wait,
this on...
Wait, did you tell us what it was?
I will.
Oh, okay.
I think it's better if you don't. Just make people angry. Wendy was shaking something for almost a minute and then wouldn't tell us what it was.
It was not beans in an empty milk jug.
No, that was the most I'm looking at the text. That's everybody's guess. 918, beans in a milk jug. 708, beans in a milk jug. 312, is it beans in a milk jug? That's what
See,
everybody's guess.
Far off.
He's kidding. I've heard her.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were for real.
No, this is honestly, does it help if I say it might be in your pantry?
Oh, I thought you said it might be my pants.
No. It could
what,
be, but probably not.
Did you drink your lunch today?
No, I haven't had it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, last April, and we talked about this, Kraft Heinz announced it would remove the artificial flavors, preservatives, and dyes from its iconic blue box. Do you know what it is now?
Yes. Mac and cheese.
Yep.
I
Kraft
just made
macaroni
this.
And cheese, the most American of all foods.
I'm telling you, I think everyone listening right now has had this.
Yep. And Wendy gets so nostalgic that she
and she's joking.
Just starts to
on her mac and
burst
cheese.
Into tears.
Wow, too bad we don't have water here.
No,
this might
be okay.
A long day.
You'll be all right.
So I just had it a couple of weekends ago, and here's the big thing. Kraft announced last April that they were going to take out all the artificial stuff.
Yeah. Now, when you say artificial stuff, that just means the color they use, right?
Preservatives, dyes, artificial flavors, everything.
All right. It's all going to be gone from Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Well, it's been gone, and no one noticed.
Really?
There was the world's largest blind taste test, and you'd think changing the recipe of one of America's most iconic foods, not telling anyone when you did it, and then selling over 50 million boxes would cause a stir.
Mm-hmm.
They did it, and no one noticed. For the past 3 months, Kraft has been quietly selling the new blue box recipe, and virtually no one noticed
difference.
Today, we announced this to the world with a major marketing blitz. So this is what you have to know now. Absolutely.
That's crazy.
No artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives, no artificial dyes. Kraft macaroni and cheese, the blue box dinner. I prefer the spirals, but this is just the regular.
Yeah.
It's the cheesiest. And this is stuff I made 2 weekends ago.
Right.
And I had it as a kid, and I still have it as an adult.
You know what's weird? When I was a kid, we never had it ever. I don't think I had
macaroni.
What? We just never, I don't know why. We just didn't have it. And then I think when I was in college, I started having it. But never as a kid. Like, for most families, that's like one night a week, sometimes twice a week. It's economical. It's filling. It's delicious. It's everything you want.
It is pretty delicious, and there are some pasta places where you can go get your noodle fix on.
Right.
Let's just say that. Yeah. And I prefer the Kraft macaroni and cheese in the blue box.
That's the way to go. Yeah.
I love it. So these are things I ate as a kid. Kids like mac and cheese and chicken tenders. That's
mm-hmm.
really a lot. You didn't have those either as a kid?
No, we had those.
What did you have? Like chicken cordon bleu, beef bourguignon? Did you have like very specialty items when you were a kid?
No, it's really strange. We had, and I've explained this to my kids and they think I'm lying, but I'll tell you anyway. We had two dinners almost every night because my dad didn't get home until 10 o'clock. So we would have a regular dinner around 7. And then when my dad came home at 10, we would have a second dinner.
Different than the first?
Yeah.
The variety in your poor mother.
Isn't that crazy, though, to have two, like...
Why didn't she just heat up what she made for you guys?
That would have made... Well, we didn't have microwaves back in the 1920s. There was no opportunity to do anything like that.
You could put it back in the oven.
Yeah, there would have been ways to have made that, but my mom's like, no, when your dad comes home, he's going to want something special. I'm going to make something special. And she was working... So I don't understand how I know
she set the bar so high.
Well, we don't even try to match it in my house. We just order out all the time. But you know, one dinner or two dinners a night was standard. And I'm surprised we didn't explode from eating that much food. That was a lot of food.
How much time? I mean, she worked. She was a dance instructor.
She taught. She had her own dance school. Yeah.
How did she have time to go to the store to get all the ingredients and prepare it and cook two dinners every night except
the weekends?
A
lot of times, dinner one, the 7 o'clock dinner, a lot of times was from a restaurant nearby. A lot of times. Not always, but a lot.
So she would home cook for your dad, but not for you guys.
Yeah, because she finished work around 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Oh, my
No, she
God.
No, it went a little bit later. It was after dinner. So either 8 or 8:30, and then we'd get ready for second dinner.
And you'd eat them both?
A lot of times.
How come you're not heavy?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I have no idea.
That amazes me.
Yeah.
College is another time. Kevin, you said you ate a lot of Kraft macaroni and cheese. Was it college or kid related?
Yes.
Which
both.
One?
Both.
Both.
Yeah.
Did you ever put additions in it? I know some people like
Always.
To cut up. Did you cut up hot dogs and put them in there?
You can do some hot dogs. You could do chicken. You could do some vegetables.
Lobster if you're rich.
Yeah.
I bet that'd be good.
You've had lobster mac and cheese, haven't you?
Yeah, but Kraft doesn't make that
They
kind.
Don't. I think in rich cities they do.
On the East Coast.
Yeah.
I like to do a little cayenne.
Oh.
It kind of disappears into the colors, and then it actually gets dangerous.
I put salsa in my macaroni and cheese.
That's good.
That's inventive.
Hershey chocolate bar.
Hershey chocolate
you
bar
do
sometimes.
Not.
Some sprinkle some pixie sticks in there sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Never
well,
together.
I just want you to know that for the past 3 months, Kraft
We've
macaroni
been duped
and we have been duped in a
by
very
the people
good way.
At Kraft. Think about if Coke had. Remember when they did New Coke? If they just didn't tell anybody, people would have noticed immediately that it was different.
Oh,
how did Kraft get away with this?
I don't know. And you know,
they're crafty, is what they are.
It says on here, the taste you love, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives, no artificial dyes. I noticed this when I bought it, and I just thought it was always like that.
Yeah.
And it tasted exactly the same. And I remember when we mentioned on this show that they were going to take out the artificial things, I'm like, it's not going to be good then. It tastes exactly the same.
And the color's not different, right?
No, what, same
so
blue
what
box.
Are they? No, not the box,
oh.
the actual. I know the box
no.
is the same color.
No, they just used paprika instead of artificial things. I don't know the whole thing, but you can go to, they have a Twitter page, Kraft Mac and Cheese Facebook page. They have taken out all things artificial, and no one noticed in a
Good.
Blind taste test.
We'll all live longer. You'll see our life expectancy rise 10 years now.
I have a list of things that, you know, you ate as a kid and you wish you could still eat as an adult. So what's wrong with my diet? Because I'm still eating a majority of these.
Are most of these on your list?
One of them's on yours for sure.
Oh, all right.
Can we take a break and talk about this?
Yeah. All right. So that's what's ahead. It's us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Kraft mac and cheese out with no artificial anything. They changed their formula months ago, and we didn't even notice.
Nobody noticed.
So, Kraft macaroni and cheese, the
taste
you
love. They
owe
us an apology is what they owe us.
No, because I didn't notice at all.
All right.
And a lot of people want to know, you mentioned you didn't really have a lot of Kraft macaroni and cheese as a kid.
I didn't have any until college was the first time I saw it in places. I just didn't have any. I don't know why.
And there's kind of a 50-50 mix here where a lot of people have written in that they would have it with their fish sticks every Friday night, which I think is a Catholic thing, and maybe Kraft macaroni and cheese was popular in Catholic households during Lent.
Did anyone say in college, too, I didn't have milk ever.
Oh.
You could just use water.
You'd make it just with water.
Yeah.
It was really thin.
Is the you can taste the difference,
yeah,
obviously.
Definitely.
Yeah, but it's still edible.
Yeah, I guess.
As edible as ever.
Right.
I love
good.
It.
Yeah.
And so these are things. Oh, so you had said you didn't have it as a kid, and your mom made two dinners.
Yeah, one for us, my mom and my brother and I, or if she was working, just my brother and I, and then a second dinner at 10 o'clock when my dad would come home.
Somebody wants to know if you grew up on a cruise ship.
Yes.
Because that seems just
on,
overkill. That, what a great mom.
Line. Yes, that's true.
All right. Well,
I thought everybody, like for a while, I thought everybody did. I go, what'd you guys have for dinner last night? And people would tell me, and I go, how about your second dinner? And they go, second dinner? What are you talking about? I thought everybody did that. Isn't that crazy?
Rich.
I guess. I don't know.
You richies.
We didn't grow up on a cruise ship, though.
Did you have one in your backyard?
Yes.
Tethered?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Childhood snacks that we stopped having as adults but definitely miss. I have not stopped having these.
What are they? Tell me some.
Scooby-Doo fruit snacks. Okay, maybe.
Those are like those. They're almost like gummy bears,
yeah.
But they're shaped like our favorite friends from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
and they taste like them too. They taste like Velma.
Jeez,
I'm
sweet,
having a grape Velma. Ah.
Lunchables. Just bought some yesterday for my son. I guess I don't eat them anymore.
Remind me what Lunchables. You
do,
Kevin?
Oh,
you
yeah.
have a Lunchable?
When I used to do the overnight shows, I would bring those in. They're
this
great.
Is a pre-made sandwich, or what is a Lunchable?
No, you have little cracker
well,
stackers.
Got crackers. You got, I mean, sometimes there's the taco ones, there's the pizza ones. They're all great.
Yeah?
You make them yourself.
When you say you get crackers, what separates?
Well,
what?
There's cheese crackers, a fruit.
Oh, I see. It's like a full meal.
Usually Scooby snacks come in there.
Yeah.
Or Scooby treats. All right, some other things. Easy cheese.
I don't know what easy cheese
yes,
is.
Yes, you do. The aerosol cheese that you
aerosol cheese, I know. Is that called easy cheese?
Yeah.
Yeah? I thought that was a wrapper.
Before whipped cream in cans rose to fame, easy cheese was the bomb.
It's aerosol cheese. Yep. Somebody invented that.
SpaghettiOs.
Oh, yeah,
had those
sure.
the other day.
Yep.
I have, they are in our pantry for emergency. They're kids are hungry and got to go with the meatballs, though.
Are the same, there were three variations that I remember. There was standard, there was the meatball you mentioned, and then the one that was very small hot dog, Frank's. Yeah. Are those are still intact?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But now they have various kinds. They have like ABC's, SpaghettiOs.
Oh.
Chicken patties, they're in my freezer now.
That's a staple. Everybody should have that.
Go-Gurt in our refrigerator right now.
Yeah.
The plastic, like Mr. Freeze worth of Go-Gurt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those are pretty good.
It's easy to give to the kids when they're trying to eat something on the way to school in the morning because they don't always get up early to have breakfast.
Right.
Dino Nuggets.
Dino Nuggets?
Dino Nuggets.
That's not a thing. They don't make those. What
yeah.
is that?
Yeah. They're chicken nuggets and dinosaur-shaped. Dinosaur-shaped.
I don't think we had dino nuggets.
Yeah,
because when we were kids, dinosaurs had just left the planet, so it was still too much for us to see those.
You're
it would
right.
have hurt our feelings.
They we were little too sensitive. Ones, though.
Right, I know, but still, it would have brought back sad memories.
Hot Pockets.
Now, that's something I think we missed Hot Pockets.
Your mother, she worked and cooked. You know, I honestly, we had, and when I think back, you know, my mom worked as a secretary, and she would come home from school at like, I think 4:30 or 5 every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have basketball practice till 6. My sister would come home from work at 6. And she always had a hot dinner made.
Oh,
always.
That's nice.
But you think back and it's like it was always a meat, a starch,
sure.
and a vegetable.
A little bit of everything.
Every night. It was like one night it was steak. One night it was chicken. One night it was pork chops.
Yeah.
But that's how you did it. It was always a meat, a starch, and a vegetable.
You know what hurt my mom's? I'll never forget. This hurt my mom's feelings
a lot.
Did
the cruise ship sink?
Our cruise ship started to sink. We hit an iceberg. when my parents would go out and we would have a babysitter, we would have TV dinners. And I said to her once, because I loved the TV dinners, and I said, you should try to make food taste more like this. This is really good, the Swanson's TV dinners. And you could just see she was deflated because, you know, she'd spend hours cooking something and only to be beaten by a Swanson TV dinner that takes 30 minutes in the oven.
Hard to beat that gravy, though, Bill.
That's true.
The like carrots and corn.
Yeah, it's true.
It really was bad, but you know what we liked as kids? First of all, we liked to be able to eat on a TV tray in front of the TV, and second of all, be honest, you liked the little compartments.
Well, the compartments were great, and we had, I don't know if you remember these, but some company, I want to say Libby's, made these dinners, and it was circus supper, safari supper, and was it seafood? What was the third one? Circus, safari, and another one. So you would set up like this little 3D environment
yes.
that was made out of cardboard, and you'd put your TV dinner in it so you could pretend you were on a safari or at the circus while
yeah.
you were having a 1-inch-long hot dog
or
a hamburger you could drop and lose.
They were baby Chad dogs carpeting. Before baby carrots.
Right. The chicken sandwich the size of a marble.
I know. Really. Although, look what happened. We weren't as fat Americans
it's
then
true.
Because the portion size got to be. Now they have Hungry Man baby food.
I know.
You can't be a hungry man as a baby.
Hungry Man baby food. I know.
And kid cuisine is kind of what they have now.
Is that the
which
same
is,
thing?
It's better than when we were growing up. But I remember you could punch things out and perforations
yeah,
were there
that
and
was
you would
it
put
exactly.
your tray in there.
So you'd spend 15 or 20 minutes setting up this cardboard food environment, and then you'd have this demonic clown staring at you while you were eating the apple pie.
But at least it kept you busy while the babysitter was there for 15 minutes anyway.
And then
it took
my
you
mom,
longer to set it up than to eat the food
oh,
you got.
Oh, by far. And then my mom has to hear that this is what real food is, not the swill you're serving us. This is real food. I'm at the circus enjoying a corn dog.
Your poor mom.
I felt so bad. You could just see like all the, she was like so deflated after that. Mom, could you try to make your food taste more like this? No.
I'm making my kids eat way too many preservatives. Yes, I am, but they ask for it by name. Give me preservatives.
Mom, we're hungry for preservatives.
Spell it if you can spell it.
That seems fair.
Pop-Tarts on the list. We still eat those.
Pop-Tarts are the greatest food ever invented.
Do you still eat them? I know you're not doing sugar at this time of year, but you still eat Pop-Tarts?
When I'm eating sugar, I got to have Pop-Tarts. I love them. Those brown sugar cinnamon, that's a gift from the heavens.
Frosted or not?
I would do either, but frosted isn't bad.
I'm with you with the frosted.
They make them not frosted?
Yeah, flavors aren't frosted.
Like the dough on those things just kind of grosses me out. It's like
cardboard. It's not even dough.
Whatever you want to call it,
It's just...
preservatives.
It's caulk.
Food, yeah.
And Yoohoo was on a list, too. Oh, that's something I don't touch.
You don't enjoy
I'll
Yoohoo?
Never touch it again.
Oh, is that good?
It's weird.
I don't think there's any chocolate in it.
Yeah, but it's just a weird flavor.
Is it
like KO?
Yeah, it's in the KO family,
I just have bad memories of KO. You'd bring it every once in a while, you know, you'd get, your mom would get some KO and you'd bring it in your lunchbox.
Right.
And then it would start smelling like a lunchbox.
Yes, I don't know. It does absorb the aroma around it.
Maybe the KO can, you know, spilled if you brought the can home because you were recycling. I guess we didn't recycle back then, but just the smell of KO or Yoohoo reminds me of an old lunchbox.
Oh, no. You're missing out. Ugh. It's so good.
Am I?
I think KO is a... I think that was a character from a comic strip from
Nancy
Moon Mullins.
Nancy and Sluggo, and wasn't KO in there too?
No, KO's from, I think, Moon Mullins, I think.
I'll defer to you.
Look it up on the internet if you have.
No, I'm not looking it up. I'm just smelling my lunchbox now and it's making me sick.
It's not pleasant. All right. I know.
The thermos too. You could never get that thing after you brought like SpaghettiOs or... Beefagetti was really better than SpaghettiOs. You'd bring it one time because you wanted to really have a hot lunch at school when you were in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
It really, to me, I don't know, maybe my thermos was broken, but it was never really that hot and it was never really that good.
Well, we're of the same age where, and we were the cutoff for this somewhere in grade school, where thermoses back then in the 60s still had a glass interior.
Right.
So it never failed. Once a week, some kid in our class would be drinking glass. You just see some kid turn blue, and the teacher would go, "What?" And they'd point at the thermos because the glass would just shatter inside, and you'd get it in your high C.
There was a layer. I thought there was a layer of aluminum, which
later
is really bad for you. But
later there was. But I remember two different times you take a drink out of it and go, "There shouldn't be ice cubes in this," and there wasn't. It was glass. It would just shatter.
That couldn't have happened.
Oh, yeah.
But the soup was always still hot.
Miraculously.
Well, yours worked better than mine.
Yeah, somehow they managed to keep it hot. All right, your calls and texts. People are calling in 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. You already know this, but I'll mention it anyway. You can reach us so easily at 312-981-7200. Call us if you have any questions or comments or whatever you want. We're here for you. I'm going to tell you a story about a teacher in Indiana. Now, in the story, they don't mention this teacher's name at all, which I guess you could think is irresponsible journalism, but I think it comes down more to the fact that she's involved in the story, as you're about to find out, but she's not doing this to get any attention.
And she wants to keep her job?
I'm sure she wants to keep her job. So yeah, let's say that's one of the reasons that her name is not mentioned in the story. Here's what's going on there. There's a bunch of third graders who she teaches, and this is a very stressful month for these third graders because they are being judged. They're taking two tests, the ISTEP test, which I'm not that familiar with. I don't know if that's standardized testing or if that's just in the state of Indiana. I'm not positive. It must be. It's
don't
the Indiana.
Don't we have ISATs here?
Yeah. So it. Yeah. I guess it's probably the equivalent. It's
Illinois
the,
statewide testing for educational progress.
That's what
it ISTEP.
Is. That's what it is. All right. So they have that test and they have another test, and the kids, these young kids, are stressing out because these are kind of a beacon of what's to come. You know, that's what a test is, obviously. So everybody's stressing out. All these little kids are stressing out. And then she wrote a letter, and I'll read you the letter in a little bit. And what the letter says is, essentially, it's not important how you do on these tests. Even though we live in a very competitive society, and these third grade kids are all nervous because they realize that their future, this is a key to their future, she's saying, as you're about to hear, she's saying, don't stress out on this. Here's what she says in her letter. Next week, it says, dearest students, next week you will take your I-STEP test for math and reading, and 2 weeks after that, you will take your I-READ test, a similar test, obviously. I know how hard you have worked, but there is something very important that you must know. The I-STEP and the I-READ tests do not assess all of what makes you special and unique. The people who create these tests score them and do not know each of you like I do, and certainly not the way your families do. They do not know that some of you speak two languages, or that you love to sing or love to draw. They have not seen your natural talent for dancing. They do not know that your friends count on you to be there for them, that your laughter can brighten even the darkest day, or that your face turns red when you feel shy. They do not know that you participate in sports, or wonder about the future, or sometimes that you help your little brother or little sister after school. They do not know that you are kind, trustworthy, and thoughtful, and that every day you try to do your very best. The scores you will get from these tests will tell you something, but they will not tell you everything about you. Excuse me. These tests do not define you. There are many ways of you being smart. You are smart. You are enough. You are the light that brightens my day and the reason I am happy, I know, to come to work each day. So in the midst of all these tests, remember that there is no way to test all of the amazing and awesome things that make you you. All I ask is that you do your personal best and do not give up. You have been working for this since kindergarten and are ready, and I believe in you. So here's what's happening as a result of this. Some people say, what a great teacher. That teacher has it going on. She knows.
I'm one of those people. I say, great teacher, take the pressure off. And don't you think if you take the pressure off, the kid will do better?
I think so. But then there's other people who say, hey, what are you doing? This is a kid during their formative years who has to realize that the pressure is on now and forever. You can't tell a kid.
Who are those people?
That's insane.
Of course.
And we have ISATs here in Illinois. That's the Illinois State Achievement Test.
Right.
It measures individual student achievement relative to the Illinois learning standards.
Right.
Results are applied to the No Child Left Behind for purposes of identifying failing schools. So in a nutshell, doesn't this represent how much money a school would get?
I think it does. I'm almost certain it does.
Because if you want to go to college when these third graders are, you know, in the college years,
right.
Are they going to look back at these I-STEP tests in Indiana?
From third grade?
I mean, seriously?
Right, right. Well, it helps with placement, you know. You take these tests and then they figure out based on your scores which group you should be a part of and which classes you need more work in.
They don't use that for that.
They don't use it at all. I think they do.
I don't think so.
Because we had, what was it called? Was it the Ohio Basic Skills
Test? Iowa Test of Basic Skills.
That's what it was.
We had them too, yes.
All right. So if you'll remember, once you took the test, a couple of weeks would pass. And then sometimes, like in our school, you got moved into a different reading group or a different math class or whatever based on what those test scores were.
I didn't know it was based on those test scores. Oh. I thought it was the grades in the classes you got.
Or extra desks in the other room?
or extra desks. No, I remember specifically they'd come back after the tests and four kids would be moved out of math class or three kids would move up or down in a reading group. So there was instant results as because of these.
I do, because I had a couple of classes I was moved up in, but I didn't know it was because of the Iowa Test of Basic Skills.
I don't know if it's 100%, but I know it had some input.
It's funny. This is an older story from 2012, but there was a third grader who needed a score of 446 to pass Indiana's new third grade reading test, which is the I-READ. You also mentioned
that. Yeah.
But last month, he scored a 443. And this little kid, 84% of Indiana third graders passed the I-READ test at this point. Ethan, a third grader, had trouble focusing, sometimes takes medicine for ADHD, and because he's not an English language learner or a special ed student, he has to retake it this summer.
Oh, wow.
I mean, don't
kids... And he was that close.
Yeah, I mean... So he may not pass to fourth grade if he doesn't pass the I-READ test over the summer.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what happened to him. Again, this is an older story from 2012, but...
He's running for president now. I saw it at the debates.
All right. Mark's going to help clarify what these tests are. I am all for this teacher saying, you know, don't get your panties in a bunch. Just mm-hmm. do your best. She's not saying blow it off.
Right.
She's saying try your best.
And that these tests don't fully define who you are.
And they don't.
And they don't.
She's right. There are people who maybe have one parent and they have to go home and take care of their sibling.
Right.
It's absolutely that. Hi, Mark.
Hey, you guys are absolutely correct. But I will, let me give you just quick background. The ISAT is no longer around anymore. It was last, 2 years ago was the last time we did the ISAT in Illinois. Now it is the PARC test, which is aligned to the Common Core standards that are all across the country.
And if I may, PARC stands for Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. And they take it K through 12. Seriously
correct.
Thinking about college and careers when you're in third grade?
No. And really, see, before when we did the ISATs, okay, or the PACE test at the 11th grade level, when they did the ISATs, essentially the kids just got a score back, and really it was a way for the school districts to measure how their kids are doing as far as, is the school doing a good job of teaching the kids what they need to know, okay? So now with the PARC test, with the new PARC test, what it's supposed to give us, which it hasn't given us yet, but hopefully it's going to get to that level, it will help the teachers better assess where the kids are at, because we're supposed to get more data with the PARC test, which will help the teachers help the individual students. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So before, with the ISATs, we just got a score. I mean, we didn't know how the heck they were doing. Now, there are other measures that schools use for, like, math. They use AIMSWeb, and there's a
MAP test that goes on to measures of academic progress.
Yep, exactly. So there are other ways that we actually measure the kids of, like you were saying, where we place them. But really, these PARC tests or the old ISAT test was just to let the school district know how they're doing. The PARC test is still going to let the school district know how they're doing overall or by individual school, but it's really going to give us the data that we haven't had of how the individual student is doing, because ultimately what you would like to do is teach to the individual student
right. And
not teach to all the kids as a big group.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's getting there, but, you know, as with anything in government and red tape and everything else, you know, it takes some time. But, you know, it's moving in a better direction than, because there's always been standards and there's always been assessment tests. But now, you know, teachers and educators and school boards have been speaking up more and said, hey, listen, if we're going to do this, at least let us be able to utilize the information to help the kids.
Are you a teacher, Mark? Because there are a lot of parents that are not really for the PARC test. They think it's kind of a waste of time and extra stress on the kids.
There's part of that that I will agree with. Just in full disclosure, I'm a school board member for a very large school district in Illinois.
Careful what you say, then.
So, yeah. But, you know, there are some very good things about PARC. I mean, the whole reason for these standards was that if I live in Illinois and my kid's in fourth grade, I can move to the state of Washington and my kid's in fourth grade, and they essentially should be teaching the kid the same information.
Right.
Because what was happening in Illinois is these standards were very much watered down to make Illinois appear to look better on the ISAT test. So we weren't doing as well as other states because everybody had their own assessment measure.
Mark, we got to hit a break, but it's trying to get things more uniform.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be plenty of people that'll call in and disagree with me. So,
well, that's okay. Thank you,
thanks,
Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Actually, we have to take a break, but Michael, stay on the line. I'm so curious as to why somebody would be against what the teacher wrote in her letter, and Michael is against it. We'll find out why next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, let me catch you up really quickly. We just told you the story about a teacher unnamed in the article on Huffington Post, who is a teacher of third grade students in Indiana. The students are taking not one but two pretty big tests. A lot of the kids are stressing out, and she wrote the students a very heartfelt letter about, please realize that as important as these tests seem to be, there's a lot more to you than just the results on this test. She goes on and on and on and says, you know, you've got so many great attributes, so many things going for you. Don't think that if you don't do well on this test, you're not a full, complete person. But not everybody agrees with this. Many people don't, including Michael. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine. What do you make of this?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I think the letter was very good, but I think it was sent to the wrong audience. I think that's something that should be sent and tailored to the parents of the students so that they themselves can sit down with their children and speak to what she put in the letter. To write that to a person in third grade and diminishing, supposedly, or it certainly sounds as if it did, the results of these tests as it relates to you, I think it's totally inappropriate. I think what she has done is probably added more stress. If you talk to a third grader today and you ask them, what about this test? They're going to say, well, it's a test, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I got to do good. It's that simple. To place that level of importance at the student level is really, really inappropriate. Letter was good, but it should have gone to the parents.
And that gives the parents an opportunity to, if they choose to say that to their own child, they can. I kind of agree with you there, Michael.
That is correct. There's a good learning experience and bonding experience between child and parent. Next thing, the true reason why that letter was written, I think Mark revealed in his statement about the Illinois teachers or the way the test has been watered down to make them look better.
Exactly, this so is, they don't even matter, really.
This is the whole root, okay, of this issue, is these teachers do not want to be evaluated. And there's one very easy method to evaluate them, and that's the number of children who are passing their courses, recognizing that they're not the total influencing factor.
Right.
Or determining factor in those things, but they refuse to have that nailed to them so that they're evaluated, they get a performance review, and it affects the retirement, where they go, what grades they teach. Do you guys get evaluated for your performance on the radio?
Yes, we do, and Steve Bertrand's dying to tell you something, Michael.
Michael, have you had students
do
in...
Do I get evaluated for my performance as a business person? Of course I do.
Have you had have you had kids in class recently? I mean, have you gone through this recently? Do you have school-age children?
No, I have grandchildren that I spend a great deal of time with.
Right. Well, I don't doubt. I mean, I don't doubt that they might be worried about evaluation and all, but I got a couple of kids who've just gone through it, and they spend a lot of time on these tests, and they spend a lot of time learning things that their teachers might not think they need to know, but that they are on the test. So, I mean, I think there is a real problem with them, too. I understand what you're saying about teachers, but there's a real problem with them.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think they probably are probably far more complex than they need to be, but keep in mind now, these are members of academia. If I'm on the board, chances are I was a teacher. If I was a teacher, I can be sympathetic to the cause of the teacher, and that being this evaluation. So they try to go in different directions to take a look at, well, we're going to look at each individual kid, not look at it as a group. We're not going to evaluate the teacher. That's all misdirected whatever, okay? I agree that they spend many hours studying for these tests. And I don't think they're absolutely necessary at this stage of the game. Some form of testing is, but I haven't looked at the test either. I honestly.
All right, Michael. And there are some people too that you know you can't always blame the teachers for this.
No, I fully understand that. But you know what? Those things can be dealt with individually. That's when you're in a performance review and you're getting your performance review, Wendy, and they say you didn't do a good job. Well, wait a minute. Let me tell you what my partner on the radio said. You're really evaluating me for what he did or what he didn't do. You have
don't
that
I know it.
Yeah, you have that opportunity. And as a teacher, you have that opportunity in your performance evaluations to voice those opinions.
Thank you.
Michael, thank you. Great point.
Steve, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
I don't mean to barge in, but there's a new Steve Bertrand on Books Up, by the way, at WGNplus.com.
Yeah.
The name of the author is Todd Rose. He's a Harvard professor, and he's talking now about the science of the individual. So we spend so much time figuring out averages, what the average fifth grader knows or the average high school student, and it ends up serving no one. So it's just kind of coincidental that he talked about it today. You could listen to it at WGN Plus.
I will. Everything. Excellent. Everyone's different. Someone very briefly, 773, the MAP test, which stands for assessment. I'm sorry, I have a sample question, and it is called, come on, Wendy, the measures of academic progress.
Okay.
The MAP test assesses students individually.
Yeah.
PARC does not, and the teachers end up teaching to the test. Furthermore, if the students do not score well, it affects the teacher's pay. In other words, if you have a student who deals with dyslexia, which in turn makes them do poorly on the test, you lose pay because that child has dyslexia.
Can that
which
be
doesn't
true?
Seem fair.
That
and
can't be true.
Again, PARC is the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, which I know a lot of parents are trying to opt out, to have their kids be opted out and say, I don't want my kid doing that because it really serves no purpose and adds extra pressure, which that school board guy kind of agreed with.
Yeah, a bit, yeah. All right, we have to take a break. We've got news coming your way next. Steve will give you the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, it's 720 WGN, and we're talking about school testing.
Yeah, a quick catch you up, and then we're going to talk to a mom who relates to this story directly. There's a teacher in Indiana, a third grade teacher, who felt a little bit of sympathy for the students and said, I know there's a lot of pressure on you right now, third graders. What would you be in third grade? Is that eight? You're about 8 years old, somewhere like that? So I know you got a lot of pressure on you right now with the iStep and the iRead tests. Those are two Indiana tests. But just know this. I know what a good person you are and what a good student you are and that you have a lot more talents and attributes than these tests could ever possibly figure out. So don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. Don't stress out. The tests will come and go. Some parents are for this. Some parents say, yeah, what a great teacher to say to the kids, hey, don't worry about it. There's more important things in life than scoring high on a test. Other parents are saying just the opposite. Hey, don't tell my kid not to try their hardest on a test. Testing is very, very important. Catherine is on the line, and her daughter received one of these letters. Catherine, you're in Indiana, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
so, you know the story better than anybody, don't you?
Right. My daughter brought the letter home, and I started reading it out loud to her and my sixth grader, and I started crying because it was so touching, and it just made us all very happy. I had my parents read it. We all thought it was great, and my daughter happens to be home today. She's sick, and I asked her, how did this letter make you feel? And she said it made her feel confident.
So well, that's true. No one knows what's going on in someone else's house. So maybe kids don't test well. There's a school health clerk that's checking in via text saying, as a former health clerk in elementary school district, school board member, parent of four, I applaud this teacher. Yes, even a third grader will find these tests very, very stressful.
Right. Catherine, prior to this letter, was your daughter feeling a little uneasy about the importance of these tests?
Yes. I mean, she was nervous, and there's so much talk about it. They do so much prep for these tests. And she came home, and as I was reading it to her, she just had this huge smile on her face. Like, my teacher believes in me, and I can do this.
And it didn't make her not want to try, did it, Catherine?
No, I mean, not at all.
It probably inspired her to do even better because it's like, okay, I don't have to worry about this. I'm just going to do my best.
Right.
Right.
Have you talked to other parents in the area, Catherine, to see if they shared the same sentiments you do?
I have not. I did email the teacher and thanked her for the letter, and you know, she said she believes every word of it. So.
Good. But you can see, I mean, I agree with you and Wendy agrees with you, but you can kind of see a parent that would take a different approach to this and say, hey, my kid's life from now on is going to be a series of tests where they have to prove themselves, so don't tell them to hold back. This is important. You could kind of see that, can't you?
I hear it, but it doesn't make any sense to me because I think all this letter is saying is you do your best, but at the end of the day, you know, you're special, you're great, and that's all that matters because not every student is going to do well, and it's one day. It's one test.
Right.
Because in Illinois, it's like a whole week, and they really prep you. They send emails home to the parents saying, you know, please make sure you give your kids a good breakfast this week because we're doing our tests, and that stresses me out.
Yeah.
Right. And my daughter even missed one of the days because she is sick. She's had a fever for several days. Yeah. So. But yes. I mean, it brought her confidence. It made us all happy, and I applaud the teacher.
Good.
For
That's
it.
What we were hoping would happen. Well, thank you, Catherine. I hope
and
your daughter's
love your show. WGN's on in our house all day long.
Oh, excellent. We hope your daughter's feeling better.
All right, thank you.
All right,
you
take
sound
care.
Like a very smart family to me.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. And Kate is a teacher, and it would be interesting to hear her take on this. Hi, Kate.
Well, hi, you guys. Two Catherines in a row, and I'm glad to follow her up. She's great.
No waiting.
So is that teacher. Yeah, right. So is that teacher. What a gutsy thing for her to do to send that letter. I have to tell you, not only were we told to interrupt in one school I was at, no, actually two, interrupt our flow of teaching our regular language arts or our regular theater or math. We're to interrupt that to start to prep for these tests.
Yeah.
We were, and that to me is the most frustrating because you think you're making progress with the kids and all of a sudden we have to stop and go, you know, compartmentalized in their thinking again. So anyway, off of that, the administration in both of these schools actually sent down examples, not from the test, but examples that they made up that were to the format of what was in the test.
Just to prepare the kids? Or what was the purpose of that?
To tell us how and what to teach to the test.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If the school didn't get a certain level of success with these tests,
yeah,
their state funding would suffer. Bottom line.
Hmm.
And that's what we were told. Dollars. Always it goes back to the dollars.
But the teachers don't get paid according to the students' test scores. That's what
they
someone
can they?
No. Because someone texted in that if they have a dyslexic kid who is not performing well on the test, that comes out of their salary. But no, that can't possibly be true.
Well, I would think that would be awfully illegal. That didn't happen with me. But I got called down once because I did almost exactly what that lovely third grade teacher did. And I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to scare them with all of these teaching direct to the test stuff and instilling fear if they don't succeed, blah, blah, blah. I just kept telling them, just do the best you can. You know, you'll learn something. Everything's cool. And just try to instill confidence in them.
That's going to get you more results.
Well, I would think so, and actually it did, but I was called down from the principal. I was not supposed to interfere with this prep.
Which is crazy because, Kate, when Bill and I took the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, and Bill, maybe you did it in your school, but I don't think so, we didn't have prep for these tests. We would do the homework and the lessons, and then it would be like, okay, next week we're doing the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. Bring your number two pencils and try your best. We didn't have prep for the tests.
Yes, that's what happened to me. I was in parochial school, but I would think that in that age, you know, even when I'm older than you, but even when you guys were in school, the same thing happened with me. It's like, oh, okay, do this. It wasn't an interruption.
Sure.
Right, a regular curriculum. Kate, thank you so much.
We were told to teach to the test and given examples.
Well, thanks for being a teacher.
You're a doll. Well, you guys are always dolls. WGN on with me all day. Too.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Thank you, Kate. Take care.
We're big with Kates.
Number one with Kates.
All right. And Jason, you're a teacher in Indiana, correct?
Yes, I am.
And what did you want to add to this?
I just wanted to reiterate what's happening with this I-STEP test. A lot of this is all driven by our General Assembly, and it's a real concern. There are a lot of kids that are traumatized by this. They really think that it's the end-all and be-all. And so there's a big push, especially this year, for teachers to kind of be a little bit more laid back with it because the kids are so stressed out. And it's just unfortunate because, you know, from the teacher side, if these kids don't do well on this, it reflects in the letter grade that the school is assigned. And then that is reflected into each teacher's evaluation. which then counts for raises or not raises or, you know, whatever's happening. And, you know, we have teachers that don't teach anything that, that is on the ISTEP test, yet our evaluations are determined on how well these kids do.
That doesn't seem like a fair way of doing it.
Not at all.
Jason, we got to run, but thank you so much and good luck.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and then more show ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're telling you about the teacher in Indiana who wrote a letter to her third-grade student saying, essentially, I know you're under a lot of pressure, and I know you have some tests coming up, but believe me, it's not the most important thing in the world. Do your best, but this test will not define you. Some people are on the teacher's side. Other people say that's not the right way to be teaching kids.
A couple from 815. One says teachers should be fired immediately.
Oh.
Another 815.
Fired immediately.
Yeah.
All right.
Sometimes I think that letter also plays into the everyone wins type of thing.
You know, as awful as this sounds, in a way it does. And I'm not a fan of the everyone wins. I'm not a fan of everybody gets a trophy. I think the trophies go to the people who win and deserve a trophy, not everybody. But in a way, it kind of does.
No, somebody's still going to get a better score than someone else. So how is that everybody wins?
Because it fits into the bracket of no matter what you do, you're all still a winner. We're all winners to an extent. It's not as blatant as the Little League.
Tough sell.
No, because I'm on the side of the teacher, but I understand where somebody would read it as this fits that. We now live in a society that never wants to use the word loser. Everybody wins on some level.
But if it's you're taking a test, it's like, okay, you're all winners in my book, but try your hardest on this. Just don't stress about it. That's not saying everybody's equal.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get a 95. Somebody's going to get a 30.
Right.
And then 847 says, if you try your best, there's nothing at all to worry about. The results represent exactly where you are. And that's perfect.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can study to make it better. You know, if I could, I am the queen of worrying about things I can't control. I worry about everything.
Right.
So trust me, it's not fun to have that anxiety. You don't need it as a third grader.
But you can study to some extent for these, to some extent.
Here, can I give you a sample map test?
Yeah,
this
sure.
is map. This is what we do here in Illinois.
All right.
It's a little passage, and then you have to tell what the author is trying to get across in this passage, and it's multiple choice.
Is this usually given to third graders?
I don't know the grade, but it's K through 12. It's a sample map test short mix.
Is the answer there? Will you be able to tell if I've done poorly?
Oh, no.
All right. Well, let's say I get it right.
God.
I probably will.
All right. You ready? Here's the passage.
All right, go on.
Giraffes are the tallest animals on Earth. They have long necks and long legs. Their necks allow them to reach high above the trees. Giraffes are plant eaters. Their favorite meal is the leaves from the acacia tree. Giraffes live in Africa. They live in herds. With their heads so high, they can look out for lions. Lions are dangerous to giraffes. When a herd sees a lion, they run away quickly. Giraffes can run about 30 miles per hour. Now, why did the author write this passage?
To teach us more about giraffes.
To give facts about giraffes.
Yes.
To describe where giraffes live.
Yes.
To tell a story about giraffes and lions.
Yes.
Or to explain why giraffes have long necks.
I think all of those.
Isn't it all of the above?
I think it's all of those. But the first one is more all-encompassing.
Well, it says where giraffes live. It says why they have long necks so they can look out for lions.
Right. I would go, if I had to pick one, I'd pick the first one because it's the most general.
I would say all of the above.
But that's not an option.
But I can't even find an answer.
I would write that in on my test. I would write in all of the above.
Would you use that T and F to signify true and false?
That's a letter I invented called the T.
You did not invent it.
I invented the T. And it's the letter that's right between a T and F.
The T.
Yeah.
You even have a name for it.
Yeah, it's called the T. Yeah, I invented that. So if anyone uses that, you owe me money because I invented that letter.
Everyone has used
it. Well, then I'm rich. I should live in a palace then.
I'm looking up teeth. Did you trademark it?
No, I forgot to trademark it. I was on Shark Tank and I tried to sell the idea to them and only Mark Cuban was interested. The rest of them threw spitballs at me.
Yeah, well, there is no answer to that. And
there
I
is
think
no
it
answer?
Was all of the above.
It is all of the above.
But that wasn't an option.
But if it had to be one, the first one was the most general.
According to you.
Well, isn't it? I think it is. I got to take third grade class in Indiana now.
I know.
I have to go back to Hobart.
But see, I'm stressed about, first of all, not being able to find the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, I mean, we're...
There was always, in every test like that, anytime you took any kind of a test, it would tell you a story, and then it would say, a good name for this story is, and then I never liked any of the answers.
Oh, wait, here. What'd you say to give facts about giraffes?
Yes.
Isn't
that it?
Oh, we gotta take the whole test? We don't have time for this.
I got 1 minute and 4 seconds. I could do it.
All right, do you agree or disagree with this statement? Alex's paragraph. Swimming is very fun. It's easy to learn to swim. My favorite place to swim is the lake near my home. I do not like swimming in pools. Pools are too crowded. Here's Carl's paragraph.
All right.
Swimming is hard work. It took me all summer to learn to swim, but I'm glad I learned. I like going to...
What's wrong with Carl's septum?
He's got the nose plug still on.
Is he wearing nose plugs?
I like going to the pool to swim. I'm allergic to chlorine. I have fun swimming with my friends at the pool.
Oh, Carl's going to get in trouble. I know Carl's got a difficult life ahead of him.
Wait. Alex and Carl agree on some things about swimming. They disagree on other things. Find the sentence showing they agree and drag it into the box titled agree. Oh, my God.
That's too much.
Do they agree swimming is a sport?
I don't know. Weren't you listening
to me when I was talking?
As soon as I realized there's no giraffes in this question, I lost interest. I would only take tests if there were giraffes used in the examples.
I don't like giraffes. They have long sinuses.
Yes, they do. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Wendy's going to get her septum fixed, and we'll be right back. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.